archaeologists. Nick, can you say hello?
Hey, aloha everyone. Thanks for having me from Guam. I think my connection is stable and good.
So we now have a forum, and for those of you in the audience, we're a little short of numbers right now. That's one of them. And we reduced the total number, so it brings a little more than we have vacancies. We're trying to build those soon. So I'm going to ask for a motion from somebody to postpone the approval of the minutes, because we don't have those available for the next meeting.
I'll move.
I'll second.
Okay. So, all in favor? We're postponing the minutes, Nick, because they weren't ready yet. So now we're going to move to approval of today's minutes. And as vice chair here and acting chair, I'd like to ask that we reorder the sequence just slightly to accommodate a distant visitor who's Stanley, who's here for the Kawa Arada restaurant. If we could do that one first, is everybody in agreement? That would be okay. I don't think we need a motion. Do we need a motion for that, or
We should have, there needs to be discussion.
okay,
You
let's have a
all are,
motion then.
yeah, and then.
I'll move.
I'll second that.
Okay. Does anybody have any other concerns about it? Okay. Nick, you're all right with that? Okay, good. So now moving on to a presentation by Jessica.
Okay. Do we have a clicker or should I just tell you guys slide?
You can just yell at us on
Okay.
phone.
You can go ahead and put it in like the regular slide presentation mode so the whole image gets a little bit bigger. Okay, that's the note. It's fine. That'll work. If you guys want to go to the second slide, it has. You know what? We're just gonna roll with it. We're gonna see where this day
Okay.
takes us. It's taking us for a ride.
It's Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday. Is this the 13th? No, it's the 15th. Okay, so that's a
The
little bit better.
honorary
Yeah.
13th, I guess.
Hold on, let me shut the doors.
At the top, it says slideshow. Do you see that up there?
You also have the slideshow button on the bottom, but I think because you added this, it's just automatically doing.
If you go to the slideshow menu item at the top, you can choose not to put it in presenter mode. On her
slideshow.
And then you just start from beginning. It's five in at the top.
Yeah, she's sharing separately from the screen.
Oh, Kelly, I think then. You're at large, Nick.
Can you get Nick? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, just check in.
Like the School of Architecture, keep looking at a different screen.
Well, on her
It's going to be
screen, it
something
just keeps popping up with
different.
notes whenever
That's
I'm
fine.
looking
We can just run it that way. That's
at
fine.
Yeah.
There we go.
Good
Beautiful.
job.
Well done.
All right, if you guys want to skip just to the second slide, it has sort of the points that I want to go over. So the point of this presentation is now that we have two new review. Oh, Trisha's on too now. Now that we have two new board members, we wanted to give you a quick overview, hopefully, of the regulations that support the board or inform the board's actions, and then like a brief overview on how what things to look for in a nomination to make sure that it is complete, real, and true, so that we can certify it and send it on to the National Park Service, or so that we have a complete, real, and true nomination document to support the state register. So the different regulations are 36 CFR Part 61, which is a federal regulation. CFR stands for Code of Federal Regulations. HRS Section 6E5.5, and HRS stands for Hawaii Revised Statutes. And then we have 36 CFR Part 60, and then HAR, which is Hawaii Administrative Rules, Sections 13, dash 198. Those are all the different regulations and rules that pertain to a review board. And then we'll also go over the National and Hawaii Register actions in terms of what actions you can take. And then if we have time and to discuss it, we can briefly talk about Section 6E-8, appeals that come before the board. Next slide, please. So 36 CFR 61 is the federal regulation for statewide preservation programs created under the National Historic Preservation Act. And it essentially says, unless state law provides for a different method of appointment, the SHPO must appoint an adequate and qualified state historic preservation review board. All of you are here. You are here because you're following state rules. So we can go to the next slide. And then 36 CFR Part 61, 61.4F states that unless state law provides for a different method of appointment, like this is essentially what the board must be composed of. And our state rules allow for more than just, or require more than just, an architectural historian and archaeologist, which is identified in the federal law. It also requires things like somebody with a cultural history or cultural practitioner background, ethnology, things like that. So we have more positions, or m more different types of professional positions that are required to be part of the board, than just archaeology or historic archaeology and architectural history. So if you want to move on to the next slide, I'm going to try to go through this very quickly. And then review board responsibilities include, but are not limited to, providing the SHPO to the SHPO on the full range of historic preservation fund supported activities that Section 101(b)(3) of the National Historic Preservation Act provides. Providing to the SHPO a full range of historic preservation fund supported activities that Section 101(b)(3) of the Act provides. Reviewing and making recommendations on register nomination proposals, which are the National Register nomination documents. Participating in the review of appeals to register nominations, and performing such other duties as may be appropriate. And under that category, you all have the ability to identify other roles and responsibilities. You can make up study committees, you can take on certain project areas and things like that. That sort of is a vague catch-all for other activities that you want to pursue as a board. So next slide. So under HRS Section 6E-5, this is the Hawaii Historic Places Review Board, creation of powers, appointments, and compensation. So this is sort of the state equivalent to that previous regulation I was going over. And under 6E-5, the next slide, please. The board shall, in terms of roles and responsibilities, order and enter historic properties into the Hawaii Register of Historic Places on the basis of their value to Hawaii's heritage, evaluate, and when appropriate, recommend the nomination of historic properties to the National Register of Historic Places. Review the state survey of historic properties undertaken in accordance with this chapter. Review the content of the state historic preservation plan developed in accordance with this chapter. And the state historic preservation plan is something that our office is required to produce every 5 years as part of our federal program. So when that five when we're in a period where we have to rewrite that plan, we are required to submit it to you all for your review and comment. And then elect a chairperson and a vice chairperson and adopt such rules as are necessary for the purpose of this section. So you can adopt your own rules and you can adopt rules to govern Section 6E-5. And then maintain the Hawaii Register of Historic Places, including all those listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and a program of notification and publication regarding properties, et cetera. And that pertains back to the rules again. So if there is ever a time where we feel as a group that the state rules are not functioning well for the state or the state register program, we would go to you as a board to make amendments to those rules. We wouldn't just unilaterally try to make a rules change. And then, unfortunately, members of the board shall serve without compensation, and the department's determination are made determinations made pursuant to Section 68 may be appealed to the review board. And if you look at the language in Section 68, the way an appeal is made is if a member of the public evaluates a determination made by SHPD about the effect of a proposed project would have on a historic resource. If a member of the public disagrees with that determination of effect, they can come to you with an official appeal and we will hear it. That is different than sort of what was proposed with the Haiku Stairs case, where they weren't appealing our determination, but they were requesting the review board have a special meeting to talk about the project and the mitigation that was identified for that project. So that wasn't an official appeal, from my understanding. Oh, Trish has her hand
just real
up.
Quick question, Jess. Is it only 68, or does that also include 6042 actions?
To my understanding, it's just 68.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. So next slide. Nice. Keep tearing through this. If you have any questions at any point in time, please just raise your hand. And if I'm going too quickly, just let me know. So 36 CFR Part 60 is the authorization and expansion of the National Register. This is a federal regulation that pertains directly to the National Register of Historic Places. Next slide. And within it, there are a number of different items that are included. But for the purposes of this meeting, I just want to focus on, next slide, please, numbers 4 and 5, which is nomination forms and information collection, and then nominations by the State Historic Preservation Officer under the Historic Preservation Program. So number 4 tells you essentially where to find the form, who produces the form, and that sort of thing. And number 5 talks about nominations that go before you all. So any nomination, whether SHPD writes the nomination ourselves, or if a member of the public or a private institution or some other entity writes a nomination and they submit it to you or submit it to us and it comes to you for review, that falls under the category of nominations by the State Historic Preservation Officer. Next slide, please. So under this statute, nominations, forms, and information collected, essentially, the National Park Service determines what the form is, and that form gets approved by the Office of Management and Budget, which is a federal office. We cannot change the form. A nominator can't change the form. Nobody can change the form. Otherwise, the form is not valid. And then we'll get to another part, but the state regulations have identified that this form shall be used for state nominations. And the same is true for the State Register of Historic Places. A nominator cannot change the form. You know, they cannot choose to add or eliminate something from the form. They have to use the form they're given. Essentially, also, it says that the information being collected is part of the nomination of properties to the National Register, and that the information will be used to evaluate the eligibility of properties for inclusion. And then if a nomination in and of itself is not completed fully or correctly, a historic resource cannot accurately be evaluated to determine its eligibility. So not only can the nominator not choose to edit what they put in and what they don't, or choose to put in or not put in, it's sort of your obligation to say, hey, this wasn't completed correctly. And if it's not completed correctly, you're not supposed to approve the nomination, even if the historic resource is obviously historic and worthy and eligible for listing. Part of your job is not just to identify historic properties and whether they're eligible for listing. It's to review the form to make sure that it's real and true and correct And if the form isn't correct, the property shouldn't be listed until the form has been edited and corrected. I know it's technical bureaucracy, but there's a legal component to it, which we'll get to maybe if we speed through this really quick. So next slide, please. So the nominations by the State Historic Preservation Officer, like I said, are any nomination that comes through our office and goes to you. There's another regulation under or stipulation under 36 CFR Part 60 that pertains to federal regulation or federal nominations. And those nominations never necessarily come to you except as a courtesy. Those nominations for inclusion are just for the National Register. They're for historic properties on federal land. And so they go directly from the federal preservation officer for the agency whose land it is or property it is that's being nominated to the keeper of the National Register of Historic Places. Our office gets a copy of it to review and comment on, like a member of the public, but we can make recommendations for changes, but we cannot prevent the federal preservation officer from saying, thank you for your comment. We don't agree with you. We're forwarding it on. Or just sort of like a comment period, and then they get to decide whether or not they take our comments and make changes or not. But they do forward our comments, or they should, with a nomination onto the keeper. Next slide, please. This again is more of the same, I think, of just what we already covered. And I'll provide the slide deck to you all. So if you want to read through some of this stuff in more detail, you can. A lot of it is a recitation of the reg or just further explanation of it. But if you can skip down, I think, to the HAR 13-198 slide, which I think is one or two. Yeah, that one. So HAR 13-198 is the state regulation for the Hawaii National Registers of Historic Places. And again, it has a number of things it covers. And then next slide. Of those things, there are a number of things that pertain directly to you all. But for the purposes of trying to save time, next slide, I'm just going to try to touch on these four. The nomination procedures, which is number one. The criteria for decisions and considerations, which is number six, nomination and approval procedures, which is number nine, and then criteria for evaluating nominations, which is number 10. So if you want to skip ahead like one or two slides, yeah, there we go. So 13-198-3 is the nominations procedure stipulation. And in it, it requires that nominations be made on the standard National Register form. This is where the reg is that I'm talking about, where that nomination form that was approved by the office, not the Office of Management and Budget. Is that it? No, it's the, forgetting the federal, agency now, but this stipulation is essentially saying you will use that form. And if we use that form, we have to use it in the way that it was created. So again, no modification should be made to it. And it all further explains how our office should provide anyone who wants a copy of that form with a copy of that form. The federal form does get updated from time to time, so that can be an important point, because if somebody is looking to nominate a historic resource, they want the most recent draft of the form. Park Service will sometimes kick nominations back if it's on like the really old version of the form. They do sometimes have some flexibility where if you have a form from like 2016 or 2012, I think, they'll accept it because the formatting is very similar. But part of the reason why there's such a stickler on it is that, from my understanding, I believe that they have, when they get a nomination form, they'll scan it in, and that scan, will like they take a scan or some sort of computer program processes the Word document and takes the information from the different fields and puts it into like a digital database or something. And so it's important that information be in the right location so they can find it. I'm not entirely sure how it works, but I think that's my understanding of it. So if you're using a really old form, it's not formatted in the way where they can easily find that information and get it put into their database. And eventually all these nominations get, the federal National Register nominations get posted to the National Archives website, so they're publicly accessible by anyone. So anyway, it's again administrative sort of bureaucracy, but there's a reason behind it. So anyway, in addition to requiring that the correct form be used, the state regulations also require that a map clearly showing the exact boundaries of the property be included, contemporary good quality photos are included, and then it says that all nominations which do not fulfill these requirements or are otherwise judged to have insufficient information may be returned by the review board to the nominator for resubmission upon compliance with these requirements. So when SHPTE receives these nominations, we do a preliminary review of them to let the nominator know whether or not they're meeting the minimum requirements. And we send them a letter with recommendations for changes. We do those recommendations are things that the nominator can choose whether or not to listen to, essentially. You all have the authority to return those nominations and say, we will not list this until you make these changes. SHPTE does not have the authority to do that. We are required for any nomination that meets the minimum requirements listed here to present those nominations to you with our recommendations, but you ultimately have the authority. You are the quality control. And if you think a nomination is not sufficient, it's your role. You have the authority to send them back for edits. Okay, next slide, please. In terms of criteria for decisions, the in deciding whether a property should be entered and ordered into the Hawaii Register, the review board shall evaluate whether the property meets or possesses individual or a combination of the following criteria. And those are just the same criteria as the National Register Program, which is A, B, C, and D. These criteria are separate from historic site significance evaluations that we do for survey and inventory under the state rules, which are A through E. Some of the criteria are repeats of the state significance criteria that run A through E, but these are different. They're similar, but different. And part of that is because the state nomination program relies on the federal form, and the federal form only recognizes criteria A through D. So I know that's confusing and it's kind of like frustrating, but it is what it is. And so we work with it. And then, in addition to assessing a property in terms of its significance under criterion A through D, and A is associated with events and times. B is whether it's associated with a person of historical significance. C is if it's an embodiment of a distinctive style from a period in history, or if it's the work of a master or something like that. And then D is have yielded or may likely to yield information important to history. One thing to note, though, is that criteria B for being a property associated with historic people, we don't ever use that criteria for historic resources that were designed by a master architect, unless that building was the house or studio of the master architect. If it's that individual's like self-portrait or something like that, if it's really significant to that person, then maybe we might associate the architect with it. But if it's just a house by, insert famous architect's name here, we don't use B, we just use C. Next slide, please. Then, in terms of nomination and approval, the nomination and approval shall be made by the preservation officer in accordance with procedures, including notification and hearing procedures set forth in this chapter. So when we present those nominations for you, to you under the reg, it's sort of like state historic preservation officer or deputy officer is essentially recommending these to you for nomination. That being said, It should be noted that just because we are required by law to present these to you does not mean that we agree that they are real and true and complete. So any nomination that comes before you, you should not assume that our office thinks that these are ready to go, because they may not be. But we are legally required to give them to you because you determine whether or not you think they're ready for listing or not. And then if a the owner of a private property objects to the nomination of a property onto the National Register, then the property shall not be included in the National Register, but should only be considered for its eligibility pursuant to 36 CFR Part 60. Now, that does not apply to the State Register, however. You all do have the ability to list a private property in the State Register without owner consent. However, then the owner can request a contested case hearing. They can file like different motions to have it removed. So I would strongly consider owner consent in your determinations. And then HAR 13-198-12 has the criteria for evaluation. And again, it just references that the criteria for evaluating nominations to the National Register shall be provided in Title 36 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 60, which essentially, again, is criteria A through D. So it's just a reference to that. So then everything that I just referenced there is guidance provided in the state rules, but it's also important to look at the federal form and guidelines for completing and determining whether or not a federal nomination form is complete enough for a property to be listed. So next slide gets into the National and Hawaii Register actions that you all perform. So next slide. When the review board members take into consideration and review a nomination to the Hawaii National Registers of Historic Places, it's important to note that you aren't so much, again, voting for or voting to include a cool historic place to a register to either the state or a national register, but you're determining whether or not the nomination form is complete, real, and true. It's important to consider if the nominator properly described the historic resource, assess the appropriate era and events and history associated with the resource, identified significant persons correctly, determined if the resource was the work of a master, etc., and or communicated how the resource can tell us about history or prehistory. It's also important to determine if the nominator included an assessment of the resource's seven aspects of integrity, which are I should have written this down in my notes. It's what is it? Feeling, association, materials, design, workmanship, and location. And what's the seventh one? But there's seven.
Setting. Setting.
Setting.
Setting.
That's right. So if a property is missing any of those seven aspects, it may still be eligible. But if it's missing most of those seven aspects of integrity, it may have lost so much integrity that is no longer eligible for listing. That being said, condition and integrity are very different things. So if a building is falling down, and we could use some of the resources in Lahaina that have burned by the fire, they have been badly damaged. They're in very bad condition. But National Park Service just completed a Section 213 report, which is Section 213 of the National Historic Preservation Act, reassessing the National Historic Landmark District there. And they determined that there was sufficient integrity left that it is still eligible for being a National Historic Landmark. So condition and integrity are two totally different things. And then what else do we have here? It's also important for you to ask if the nominator properly applied the appropriate National Register and State Register to that end, criteria within the statement of significance to consider if the photos for the National Park Service guidelines were followed when photographing the building and to identify that the nomination includes the appropriate mapping with appropriate annotations indicating the historic resources location, and I should have included in their boundary if there is a district or a large property with a large boundary. I think the Park Service rules is that anything I think under an acre you can just pinpoint on the map versus anything over an acre you actually have to do some sort of polygon or shape around the boundary of the property. It's something like that. And then it's also important to note that this list is not exhaustive. There are other factors also to consider, but this is at least a starting point for evaluating nominations. Other things to keep in mind, next slide, is again, condition doesn't equal integrity. Minor changes to a building too, such as putting in new windows or doors, they might affect the integrity of the building, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the building is no longer eligible. When you're taking into consideration alterations to a historic building, it's important to evaluate whether or not that element is actually character defining. So if I know we've been looking at like La Pietra and stuff, there's a rhythm to those buildings. And there have been alterations to some of those townhomes, but some of it is just cosmetic, like updating a kitchen and kitchen appliances, stuff like that. But if they were to completely gut and redesign the interior floor plans of those homes, then you might say, hey, this is, or they might, if they change the exterior of those townhomes, you might say, hey, this one doesn't fit in the context with all the other ones. This building is different now. It is not the same. It does not tell a story about this period in time. Therefore, perhaps it's lost integrity and is not eligible. So when evaluating the nominations, it's important to kind of look at, are these superficial changes cosmetic, or do they directly impact character-defining features such that this resource has lost integrity and therefore is ineligible for listing? So next slide. How many more do we got here? And then once you've made a determination for a nomination, if you vote in favor of listing the resource, just to let you know, it's immediately included in the State Register of Historic Places. But if the review board votes in favor of recommending the nomination be forwarded to the National Register, at that point, the State Historic Preservation Officer and their qualified staff review the nomination to ensure that it meets the minimum requirements as well. And if that nomination form doesn't meet the minimum requirements that Park Service has set, we cannot forward it on to the National Park Service, to the point that the National Park Service has told us, don't send us these nominations anymore because they're not complete. And this is an issue, and this is part of the reason why we're going over this, is that we've had some people concerned that their nomination has been listed in the State Register, but it hasn't been forwarded onto the National Register. And the reason for that is because there needs to be substantive changes and edits made to the nomination before the Park Service will accept it. And so we've been instructed by the Park Service not to send these nominations anymore because they don't have the staff to themselves review something that's not ready for prime time, unless it's just something minor that they want more clarification on, or you know, different photos of. Case in point, like the quote unquote Miracle House, again, from Lahaina, you guys listed that a few months before the fire happened. And because of that,
November.
Okay, so it was like 6 months before the fire happened. And we forwarded it on to the National Park Service. And the Park Service sent it back to us wanting us to add language that reflected that its elevated significance, because it was one of the only buildings essentially almost left untouched by the fire. And they wanted photo documentation that showed sort of the view shed from different points from the property out into the burn scar, further emphasizing that this building had been relatively untouched. And then going into a little bit more detail too on, because the nomination identified some of the rehabilitation work that had been done, but then they wanted us to, if I'm remembering this correctly, talk a little bit about how those modifications might have prevented the building from burning or something to that effect. So that came back to us. We added those edits, and I believe it was listed, right, Sophie?
In the National Register?
Yeah.
No, they kicked it back with comments.
Again? Or we haven't finished making them?
We've resubmitted.
I haven't finished.
Okay.
Yeah, because Stanley and I are still working on it.
Yeah, so that one, I guess, then is still in this limbo stage. But the nomination itself, the initial comments that came back were that this is a good, solid nomination, but we want this added stuff added to it. So In that case, it's fine. But there have been other instances where they've sent a nomination back and said, please don't send this kind of stuff to us anymore. So just to let you know, we do have a quality control issue between the state register and the national register. And that's part of the reason why there's stuff being listed to the state, but it's not being included in the national because the form isn't completed correctly. Next slide, please. So SHPD does have a staff person. Her name is Sophie Cutts, whose job it is to essentially review these forms and provide the comments from her initial review. Sophie previously consulted with me when I was architecture branch chief about her findings on nominations and drafting response letters to property owner or nominator. She's now working with Mary as well. So it's not just one individual making these decisions. It's the architecture branch that is working together collectively, reviewing these nominations and coming up with a response. And so we try to provide a substantive response based on our experience and knowledge of the program and what Park Service's feedback has been to us on what they'll accept and what they won't. And again, this form is a national form. It was created by the Park Service and approved by a federal agency. We continuously get feedback from the Park Service. We continuously get training from the Park Service on the National Register program. We know what we're talking about. And so when we provide comments, they're not superficial. They're actually asking for things that we know that the Park Service will ding us on or may ding us on. So when we make recommendations to you, we're not making them lightly. You may disagree, we may disagree, and we can take that up with Park Service about some of the things that they want us to do that don't necessarily make sense for Hawaii. But not all issues are at that level of, programmatic like deficiencies. A lot of it is just these superficial things like cleaning the record up, providing the proper documentation, providing the proper photos and photo labeling and photo key and all of that stuff. And if you approve a nomination to be listed in the state register and it doesn't meet those requirements, the likelihood of a nominator or a property owner taking our comments into account and correcting the nomination are very low. We have very few people who turn around and make those edits. So then the administrative record is that we have a nomination form that is incomplete and inaccurate, but it's for a property that's listed in the state register. And we can skip down a couple slides if we want, because I want to wrap this up because we're like running too late. But like the biggest issue areas are the section 7, where we talk about the narrative description and section 8 portions. The narrative description should just describe the historic resource. You should talk about what the materials are, the building construction, method, the style, if there's a style, like things of that nature. And then section 8 is the statement of significances. This is where you do the criteria of like application, which criteria it falls under. We're often seeing a repeat of information between section 7 and section 8, like redundancy there. And the information that goes in section 7 can sometimes be referenced in section 8 and vice versa, but it shouldn't be a verbatim cut and paste of information just to make your nomination longer or to fill space. And sometimes we are seeing that, and that's not accurate. And the Park Service, again, that is something obviously they will kick a form back for. We also see guesstimates or creative invention when it comes to, well, this building appears to be this, or it was constructed on the state, but then there's no evidence for that. And if you look at the like property tax information or even the nomination itself will have conflicting information in it. And it's okay to say, we don't know exactly when this was built, but it was likely built between this date and this date. That is completely okay. But it's not okay to say something that there's no evidence to back it up. It's not okay to invent a style. Unfortunately, Bulletin 16A has a pretty definitive list on things that we classify things under. If you want to call it vernacular and then insert something here, you can do that. But and this is particular to architectural resources, right? But there are definitive style types that a building falls into. And just because a building owner might have taken creative license and referenced, say, a different style period, if it's obviously like plantation style, but they decided to put, I don't know, like like something decorative, like a Queen Anne something, like trim on the building. It's still a plantation style building. It just has Queen Anne trim on the building, you know? So that is important clarifications to make because it helps us to better understand and then also accurately classify a building. And this is like getting into dorky levels of detail here, but this is the sort of level that these forms go into. And the most important point to this is that, like, these records are important because when it comes to environmental review, when it comes to 6E, when it comes to Section 106, when it comes to evaluating, like, after a fire, if a building still retains integrity, we use these nomination documents. And if they're inaccurate, then the restoration of that building, its eligibility, its integrity will be based on what administrative record we have, if we have one. And so if it's telling something false or incomplete, then it's hard to make those accurate assessments and judgment calls on whether or not a project will adversely affect a historic resource or not. So that kind of gets into this slide. I don't know what the next one is. But so your options, I guess this is the important takeaway for you right now. If you feel like a property is eligible for listing, but the nomination is not yet ready to be approved, you guys can defer the item with recommendations for edits. You can just reject the item altogether and say whatever your rationale is. But if you list it, then essentially take into consideration that we likely won't get edits. Because if you list it and still make recommendations for edits, we may or may not get those edits. And the property has already been listed technically. So just take that into account. I also include some resources on the back slide. So again, like I said, I'll provide the slide deck to you. So if you want to go through those at all, it includes two documents that are kind of towards the middle top, that second item there. There's two checklists that National Park Service provide to us for a technical review, and then I forget the name of the other checklist, but they're documents that we use in-house for evaluating nominations to determine whether or not they're complete, real, and true. And then the others are National Register bulletins that are frequently used. And then at the bottom, other than Bulletin 15 and Bulletin 16A, which are the two big National Register bulletins showing how to complete a form, there are a number of other ones that get into more detailed situations. You can find those at the link at the bottom under other publications and guidelines. That should bring you to a website with all the National Register bulletins in it. So, apologies for running long, but that's my intro into the program. Welcome, new board members. Let me know if you guys have any questions. And Sophie and I and Mary will be here if you need anything, and Brianna. So, yeah.
A quick question, just kind of on that last point. We've done this where a form could be missing like spelling error or something, some little changes, like be minor, and we've said, oh, we'll recommend it with these edits.
Yeah, they're not making
They're not making
necessarily the
well,
edits.
I usually
So there's no conditional recommendation.
No.
No, once you guys list it, it's listed. And so then they can go and apply for the property tax reduction and all that. That's great. I'm glad that they're doing that, but we're not getting the edits. So
Usually,
it's
like, it'll usually go up in the register, and then it's my job to follow up, and it rarely gets corrected past that. So I asked Jess to put this together, but it also, she's like also pointing out, thankfully, is that this is like what I do, and that's pretty much going through reviewing everything, giving the corrections, and it's your job to basically be like, okay, I've read this nomination, XYZ is incomplete, because I send you guys the rough draft, and then you get the final as well, so you see what corrections I'm asking for. So if anything past that, if you notice anything, like the review board is the time to be like, I noticed XYZ, I want this change done before we list it.
So if we have a conditional approval, we have no power to this, either approved or it's not.
I mean, if we could make a rule for that, saying that the review board can make a conditional approval and they have X amount of time to make that correction, like that could be a rule change we try to add to the administrative rules, where that could be an option. But at this point, because SHPD doesn't have the authority to deny a listing until these changes are done, it's boards, we get into this weird situation, I guess. So I just want you guys to be made fully aware of what that situation is, because ultimately it's up to you. Ultimately, you are the deciders. It's your decision, you know, and that's it. So
on the flip side, then, under the current rules, if there are minor adjustments that would be made to the form, and then we would be happy as a board. If we deny it at the board meeting and then they go back and quickly make those changes in a couple of days, do they have to? I mean, you obviously have to wait again until we have the next board meeting to get it actually on the register, but you have to like pick up meeting time with having the whole discussion and the whole everything again.
We could probably do like a segment of re-review where we're just like, these are the corrections that got made, instead of doing a whole presentation segment.
We could probably just we wouldn't necessarily need the person who presented to do the full presentation over again, just to check in, like, these were the changes you wanted them to make, these are the changes that they did make, and then you could evaluate whether or not it's sufficient. Hopefully they made all the changes, and we can say, hey, they just made all the changes, and it's just a quick look. We could do it that way.
There is a range, obviously. I mean, if it's a spelling error.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Send it back.
But if it's one of those extreme situations where it's like Section 7 and Section 8 are essentially the same thing, that Section 7 doesn't have an integrity assessment in it, and that it doesn't really narrate the significant, like, the doesn't describe the resource at all, but it just talks about its history. That is the biggest thing, is people tend not to fill Section 7 out and like describe the resource to us. Like, what is it? What is it made from? Like, what is the building method? Is it dry stack? Does it have mortar? Like, what is the, you know, period of significance for this resource, and how does the building methodology like reference that period or whatever? You know, it's usually a repeat of the history. And when we get into that situation, I would strongly recommend asking them to rewrite that section. And Section 7 is so important, because that's what we use for reference when we're reviewing 6E and 106 projects, is looking at that. How is it built? Like, is the alteration in keeping with that? Is that going to be an effect or not, et cetera?
I think, you know, I've been on the board for quite a few years in two different groups of time, and it seems to me that we have more or less followed this kind of procedure most of the time. If something is not adequate, we send it back.
I would say that you guys have exercised that, but not to the degree like that Park Service is like. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there are a number of nominations, I'll just say that, where you guys have recommended something to the National Register and it has been kicked back. Like Miracle House was a special situation. Mauna Kea has been that way. The Stone Monument nomination was that way. Like, there are a number of nominations that are sort of that way. And so I would just say that yes, you guys do have made recommendations for something to be rewritten. There are definitely a number of cases, like Atsubo Monument is definitely a case. But then there's other nominations where there have been sufficient, like,
the style wasn't
like issues where Park Service has been kicking them back.
In our defense,
no, I don't want to. But you guys, like, the thing of it is,
I'm gonna put this out there. I've worked in register off and on for 45 years. They are not exactly consistent in their calls. I have seen the opposite call by different reviewers and by the same reviewer before. And I'm particularly on something like a plantation in the Virgin Islands, which would only exist if it had been and agricultural. And yet I will get it set back that there's not sufficient farmland to make it agricultural anymore. And then I've had the opposite. When I'm taking agriculture out of the story, they have sent it back and saying, surely agriculture must be part of the significant. So I have seen them all over the board. And I talked to Carol Scholl about it in June, a former keeper, and she says they're all working remotely. They are never going to the office. And I have a feeling they're not comparing notes. So it doesn't all fall back on us. It's really the consistency of the register program, I think, too.
That as well. And that's why I started doing these memorandums for you guys to sort
They're
of
very helpful.
To give
Thank
you
you.
A boost on what
mm-hmm.
exactly the MPS is looking for. And
there are a couple of things I would like to bring up before the board at some point, but we should get through them. I'm thinking, can we have new business at the end? Or
yeah.
Some of these things. I think I'd like to have a board discussion in the first minute if we can.
That sounds good. Thank you, Jess.
Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, good luck to the new members for making sense of all this.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to vote on this at all.
No, I meant
the next part.
Chairperson.
Oh, yes. We should take nominations and vote on a chairperson. That's right. So is there any, I think that there needs to be a call for someone to nominate someone to be chair, and then there's discussion over the nominees, and then there's a vote, I believe.
I thought we did this, but I'd like to nominate Nick Beluso as the next chair.
You've done such a good job so far.
Yeah. Are there any other nominees for board chair? Is there deliberation on Nick's nomination?
I think we need to have somebody who's been on the board for some length of time to know how it's operating. So even you, I'm sure, would be a wonderful chair. But you know, we don't want to make stuff out of the gate.
We'll
get back. I don't know if Brandis meets that criterion.
Nick, I'll go with that nomination.
And I'm vice chair now, and I've enjoyed my role as vice chair.
a little more
burden falls on you.
Yeah,
you got it, Jess.
Yeah. Does anybody want to second the motion?
Did we make a motion? I just say nomination.
Oh, yeah. And does anybody want to make a motion on Nick's?
He's the only nominee. We do a vote now, right?
We just do like all those in favor of Nick say aye.
Well, we need a motion. We need a second. And then you vote.
Okay, cool.
Do we check with Nick first? Nick?
Oh, yeah, Nick.
He said
do
he'd
you,
be glad to do it. He just
Nick,
said
you want
that.
To nominate anyone?
I'm happy to accept. And I appreciate the nomination. So.
Then I'll make the motion. That Nick be our chairperson.
Okay.
I'll second that. I'm the seconder
today. You've done a good job. Sure.
Any discussion or deliberation on the motion? No? Okay. Then the chair at that point states the motion and asks for a vote.
Well, since we only have one nomination and that nomination has been I don't know why we had to move in second the nomination since there is only one.
We were following Robert's rules of order, Bill.
I don't think we are.
Well, we're attempting to.
I don't think we are. I think there's only one nomination
yes.
on the floor. I'm going to call the vote for the single nomination.
Okay.
All in favor? And we need to get a sign from Trish.
Yeah.
She's not on here.
Oh, she must have dropped. Okay. I'm not sure, like, her connectivity ability, so we may see her come and go.
Approved by the members present.
Yes. We have quorum, so
well,
we have
Nick voted for himself as well, so that's four.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Landslide.
You did vote for yourself, Nick.
Yeah.
I guess so much. Hey Ross, Nick.
There was an explosion.
Yeah.
Anybody that seemed fine playable though what I'm referring to. All right, so let's I have a number of things I'd like to add at the end of the meeting to talk about. Some of it comes out of Jessica's really thorough and good presentation, but
Does Mike pin out after the meeting?
Yeah.
Can you
Nick,
hear me?
if you can't, or you're not sure you can, because I know your communications is weird, we can have Bill keep running it.
I've got it. I only have one screen in front of me and nothing printed out, so I can toggle back and forth if Bill's happy to
I'm
run
happy to continue the
it. Okay.
word of the meeting. Yeah.
So I appreciate that. Thank you.
That's the whole
Okay,
reason
Vice
for a
Chair,
vice
yeah.
chair. So let's move on to the nominations themselves. And as we said at the very beginning, we're going to ask Stanley to come and present it first out of order because the deference to Stanley means that actually Maui Island.
Thank you. I'm filled with a lot of trepidation after our review of
Stanley.
nominations.
Did I put the fear of God in all of you?
Okay. But thank you everyone for letting me go ahead and present. My name is Stanley Solomelo, and I am here representing Maui County Planning Department. This nomination was prepared in partial fulfillment of Maui County's requirements as a certified local government, or CLG. The M. Kawahara Restaurant is being nominated to the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criteria A and C. The nomination has been prepared to recognize the significance of a property that is a notable example of a plantation vernacular commercial building with craftsman influences that was presumably designed by an unidentified engineer from the nearby Libby McNeil and Libby Pineapple Cannery and erected by cannery carpenters in 1928. The property's nomination is supported by its owner, Jeremy Baldwin, who's here actually today, and Pavela Alahau LLC that is rehabilitating the building. Next slide, please. Actually, two slides. One more. Okay. The Kawaharada restaurant was opened in 1929 by Makisu and Harumi Kawaharada. It initially fed multiple shifts of cannery workers, but eventually fed their families as well as local school children. Over a period of 65 years, the restaurant and the Kawaharadas became incorporated into the oral traditions and community history of Pavela. The family history was extensively documented by Professor Dennis Kawaharada, who published his research in WordPress. He also graciously provided information and permission to use the historic photographs that were included in the nomination. I recommend that if anyone has the time, please take an opportunity to read Professor Kawaharada's family history. As a side note to the Kawaharada family photos in this slide that were not included, will be included in another draft that will have to be submitted. Next slide, please. Makisu arrived on Maui in 1906, settled in Paia, and married Tomoe Hirio, but she died in childbirth in 1910. He later married Harumi Masuda in 1916. They started their family at Hamakuapoko before moving to Pavela. Both were from Tomomura, a village 5 miles northwest of Hiroshima City, and they were members of the second largest cohort of Ise who settled in Hawaii. So the arrows point out Pavela on this an old USGS map, and then we have an aerial photograph that shows the restaurant right across from the shell of the cannery, which is now a shopping mall. Next slide, please. The Kawaharada restaurant was first recorded on the Sanborn Insurance Company sugar mill and cannery maps of 1930. The initial building was too small for the number of restaurant patrons and was enlarged 2 times in 1931 and 1946. The dwelling was also added nearby in the latter year as well, but is not included in this nomination. So you can see how the building expands through time. That's okay. Thank you. The restaurant is a unique building because it was constructed on a steep slope that was known as the Gulch. Only one floor is visible from the road, but there are two floors beneath it. The middle floor contained the living quarters for the Kawaharada family, and the lower floor contained a commercial laundry, storage area, secondary kitchen, and a food hall. The Kawaharada family history is also unique because it includes multiple themes that are not usually found together that can be combined into a single narrative to represent Hiroshima Issei. They include Japanese and Japanese-American businesses, World War II internment, Americans of Japanese ancestry, or AJA military service, in this case during the immediate post-war period. And next slide, please. And as yet, unrecognized theme and related subgroups, Hiroshima Issei and Nisei, who visited the city from Hawaii during the post-war period, those who provided monetary assistance and or aid, or those who survived the bombing and returned home to Hawaii. And if you look on the far left photo, it actually shows a woman who was injured in the bombing who survived, and she came back to Hawaii and was met by her grandmother, who was from Paoa. And then the middle photograph is actually of a Nisei veteran, and this was sold by a local antique vendor to a guy in California, and he posted the whole collection of photographs online from this veteran, and I don't know whether he was with the 442 or the 100th, but it has him in uniform at various locations in Europe, and then it shows him visiting his village outside of Hiroshima and then posing for this photograph. Next slide, please. Okay, we've got three floor plans on the left-hand side. That's the floor plan that faces Puhiaha Road. The next floor plan in the middle has all the living quarters in it. So remember, everybody's living below the restaurant. So at the end of the day, they don't get to leave. They go downstairs. And then for things ranging from commercial laundry, meaning tablecloths, napkins, things of that nature, gets washed downstairs. And storage for articles related to the restaurant is also stored at the north end in room 100. And then the furo is located in room 102. And I don't remember exactly what 103 was, but that's essentially functioning as another commercial related floor. Next slide, please. This is probably the most famous view that everybody takes on photo one. Everybody takes a view from that side of the restaurant, and you can see how it looks today. It's the sign, unfortunately, isn't there anymore, but everything else pretty much is. And you wrap around the corner to the north, I believe it's the northwest side of the building, and you can proceed down this flight of stairs to the bottom floor, as well as enter a dwelling unit on this side, on the north side of the building. Next slide, please. This is at the northeast corner, on the left photograph, and you're looking up towards this entry. That entry would take you to both the storage as well as an entrance into that unit on the north end of the building. The next slide, you're looking at obliquely across the facade, and you can see how long it really is. And the challenge here is it's exposed on three sides. It's built on a slope. And I may ask for guidance from the architects because I felt uncomfortable calling it a basement because it's really a full floor. But you can comment on that afterwards. Then we can go to the next slide. Then you can see that in this case, we've got an original finish, even though it's on an addition, which is vertical wallboard, and then a layer of shingles has been added on top of that, so that the exterior skin is now close to flush with the window and door trims. Next slide, please. Then as you wrap around the building and there's lots of vegetation, you come to the south side of it and there's actually a formal entrance into the units on the south side of the building. Next slide, please. Here's a view of the interior on the north side, looking from the main dining hall. So we're looking from this, the first dining hall and then the addition. And then the transoms were installed at some point. I don't have a date on any of those. Next slide, please. And this is looking in the opposite direction, which is south in the main dining hall. And then the next slide on photo 14 is actually of the kitchen. Then we go downstairs. This is the one unit on the north end. And this is what it looks like, a living room and a bedroom. It does have a bath. Next slide, please. This is the unit with the formal entry that we just looked at. So it's got five panel doors and six over six windows, framing the entry, and then the two over two sash, which are pretty much common on other sides of the building. So you, instead of using this room as a living room, the person has converted it into a bedroom, and then he or she has two studio spaces. Next slide, please. Then we have a studio space and real simple bathrooms. And downstairs, you've got, now it's converted to residential laundry, but there's a soaking trough, which is next to the laundry. And then we have what remains of the furo in an adjacent room. Coming up from the unit on the south side with the formal entry, there's a stairway that leads back up to Uliaha Road, and we have a stone wall that demarcates the stair. So it's a one-of-a-kind building. I worked for a number of years looking at Plantation Vernacular buildings on Maui and the and on Lanai as well as Molokai, and it's a one-of-a-kind building with a one-of-a-kind story. So do you have any questions? Please feel free to ask.
I just want to remind everybody, particularly your members, that this is basically a question period, then we'll make a motion, then we'll have a more thorough discussion.
Just kind of one question about the connection to Hiroshima. How is that reflected in the architecture, or is it?
It's not.
How does that fit into the nomination?
It's the history of the family. And a lot of, I've come across Hiroshima, Issei, or Nisei families before, and it's always, you get, well, they came from Hiroshima or Hiroshima Prefecture, but never have I found an incident where the family actually goes back to visit their family. And in this case, they had lost a family member, so they still had connections. And then we don't talk about it in the post-war period, but Sumida, you know, here in Honolulu, was the store in Chinatown. That family raised, or he helped organize Hiroshima fund, which sent at minimum $100,000 to aid survivors from the bombing. And then we have, I think there are more incidents that, and that's why I'm suggesting that it should actually be researched further, because it just, it's important, I think. You know, and it's the first time where I've encountered all of this in one family.
I think it's a technical issue that gets subsumed under criterion A.
That's
a lot of stuff can go under A that sometimes people think you need to go somewhere else.
One other question, you mentioned an additional draft submittal. So is whether you have clear bias, or where are we at with that process?
I'll leave that up to the board, but I felt that I needed to add the marriage shot, or the post-marriage shot from 1916 of the family, and then the second kid's shot that I had included on that slide. And it was, so I will have to resubmit to Shippy.
I'll say this, like, from our evaluation, I think Shippy found that the nomination was complete. It was a completed nomination. It is possible that a nominator wants to include a couple additional supporting documents. If you feel, though, that the nomination as it's submitted is real, true, and complete, you can vote and approve it. They can make edits to the nomination as long as they're not substantive, like adding additional documentation, and it won't have to come back to you. Just as long as whatever the form it is in today meets those minimum requirements, it's fine. And then if they want to make additional edits, they can, and not have to come back to you.
On that matter, I was looking at Sophie's suggested changes and things. There are some small things where you left out date or something, 1960. But on the issue about the summary paragraph on style and everything, I want to have a little bit of discussion about style, but later. But you say there, Sophie read that five. But actually, you double counted workmanship in both the non included and the included.
Actually,
you were right on your count. But I actually question that, whether, in fact, I don't think it's lost material or design integrity. At least the substantial recognizable elements seem to be continuous, and the materials seem to be continuous.
Right, but it's changed. And I think.
Not substantially, I don't think.
Right.
Can be diminished without being lost.
Correct.
I believe so.
So I'll
show the anterior shots so much. They had canic still had the framing seemed to be intact and original.
So I will defer to you on that.
I guess the underneath space gets used, I think, in Hawaii. We call it still a lanai if it is exposed to the open air. And if it's not accessible as a crawl space.
Right.
But you're right in not calling it a basement. There are very few houses in Hawaii that have a basement.
Yep.
Just for a cat space. I don't know. It's not a shared space. The elevator. The cookhouse has a basement.
Well, I would concur on integrity just from from the documentation that was provided, relative to a lot of other buildings from this period, there seems to be a lot more original material, or if it was replaced, it was replaced in kind of being indistinguishable. There were windows, most of the windows look original, which is big.
Doors, too.
I would say those.
I wouldn't throw it away. So could we have a motion at this point if everybody's finished asking questions or doing?
Okay. I'll update all the motions today. So I'll make another motion that the Hala Harada restaurant be recommended to the state historic register of historic places under criterion A and C.
At what level of significance? Should this be listed state, local, or national?
Local.
Just local.
Or state.
Which would you like?
Eventually, both state as well as national.
No, I
We're
mean
not
like,
talking about register. We're
yes,
talking about the level
level
of significance.
The level of significance.
It could still be locally listed and have
yeah,
national significance and vice versa.
I think
is
it's
it...
I think it's local.
Local. Okay.
Yeah.
So other questions? Oh, more discussion? Anybody?
Yes.
Need a second.
Yeah.
We need a second.
We need a second for listing the red. Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. The next seconded, Graham made the motion. Any further discussion? And here's a good case of something where we know there will be changes made, I feel, that we wouldn't want to have to reject it because we feel these changes need to be fit. Nick, I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I'm sure there's a delay here. Stanley started. Are we also voting to recommend it to the National Register?
Oh, would you like it submitted to the National Register?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Eventually, yes.
Recommend that it. Another part of your nomination is to recommend that it be forward.
So another part of my recommendation for my nomination is that, oh my gosh, another part of my motion is that it be recommended to the National Register of Historic Places as well.
Nick, you are also still seconding that. Nick's still seconding that.
But I will still second that, and I apologize for seconding the first one. And then.
No, we're very happy that you seconded the first one.
Is there any further debate on the motion?
No, I did want to make one comment, which is I think that in this case, like when we're talking about revisions, the revisions that are recommended aren't required for it to meet the baseline. For it to be accepted would be the distinction there. Like, we wouldn't have rejected it. It's just some suggestions, right, to make it better.
That's my view.
So it's got, we have.
Yes, yeah.
I think we're going to have
so
to turn away so many if we. That's a very gray, grayish area.
For some.
Well, that's the thing, though. In most states, they just have the National Register, and the State Historic Preservation Office determines what goes before the review board and what doesn't based on its completedness. And so it is normal to reject nominations that don't meet those minimum requirements. And so I would recommend that you not hesitate if it doesn't meet them. In this case, SHPD is saying that, yes, it meets the minimum requirements, but if there's small technical changes that at the end of the day, if it won't make or break a larger like 6106 issue for it to be corrected, then I think we would be comfortable like supporting you and listing it. But if it was something substantive, where there was a huge gap or repeat in information or just inaccurate or they edited the form, we would strongly encourage you to defer it until those edits were made.
We did one of those up at Zaleva Heights. We went back to the drawing board on that one, and that really had to go back. But most of them are pretty close.
So even if these changes weren't made, it wouldn't go back. It's fine.
If these changes weren't made, like I guess our request to you is to make the determination that knowing that a lot of the cases where you've listed in the past and recommended edits that they've been listed, but the edits haven't been made, to determine for yourselves whether or not that's really important to the nomination. And if it is, defer. If not, then
that nomination that you all were just flipping through is the original nomination. So all the nominations that I bring myself each time are the original rough drafts. The memorandums that are placed with each nomination that you've all been given beforehand is a comparison of the original draft versus the final submission they've submitted prior to the review board hearing. So basically it's just saying these are the corrections I asked for, if it was completed or not. So that draft has been finalized and completed with additional documentation and all that stuff as well.
So as of this, I think we all agree with the slides.
Okay, so no further debate on the motion?
Oh, all in favor of listing in the Hawaii State Register, criteria A and C, and forwarding to the National Register? Show that that's unanimous.
Thank you.
Stanley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stanley.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stanley. Safe travels.
All right.
And so, if you don't get me wrong, I really like that you're doing this. It's something we've been wanting for a while to get this input from staff.
I didn't expect you guys to see my rough draft, but
I do want to discuss a couple things to see if we can get on the same page.
That's fine. I brought all my dirty copies.
But I do appreciate that we're getting staff input on this. Just for general knowledge of people out there, most states actually have a national register program, and everything that's listed on the national register that's automatically listed on the state register. We're different in a way of the many things, and we have that E criterion, E cultural. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the regular order. And this is the originally titled Beach House. And now the Malia Kamana Beach House.
Before starting, I'd just like to say I do take your comments very seriously. And when revisions are asked, I do make them and submit them to the office.
Thank you. Thought of that.
The Mailai Kahana Beach House is out of 56277 Kamehameha Highway. The way I was told to find it, it's by telephone pole 36. And it's out at Mailai Kahana. Next slide. Don't know the year built. I just put circa 1930. It's somewhere before World War II. I'm quite sure of that. Get into that more as I go through the discussion. Well, I guess I can go through that now. Essentially, oral history on the site says that it was built by Clifford Kimball. I cannot find any information on that at all, or at least no written documentation. And the oral history seemed really sketchy because Kimball owned the Halekulani Hotel. And according to the story, he would take visitors from the hotel out to his beach house. They'd stay out at the beach house and then ride around to the Haleiwa Hotel, which the oral people said was also owned by Kimball. Kimball didn't own the Haleiwa Hotel. He did manage it, but he only managed it up from 1909 to 1917. And that's when he quit and went and started the Halekulani. So the story is a little off, I think. And also, this area is a fairly remote area. It was the last part of the Belt Highway to be paved. The area from Haula to Kahuku, that 5-mile stretch was done in 1933. So before that, you were getting to this beach house by dirt road. I did find one aerial map from 1928, which does not have the house on it. The tax office, and I don't know why, they have 1926 listed as the date of construction. But I'm quite sure that's wrong. But I also went out and checked with Campbell, well, what's it now called? Campbell Corporation, the successor to Campbell Estate. They own the lease on the property, or they own the land, actually, and they leased it out. And it went fee simple in 1980 or 76. It went fee simple. And they don't have their records of the property anymore. So I was hoping that maybe, and that Campbell Estate did not record the leases in the Bureau. So that's the problem I've had, is not being able to find out. I went through newspapers.com, going all through the entire 30s, looking for Clifford Kimball, and nothing in there mentioned that he built a beach house. So I don't know if he built it or if he bought it from somebody else, but I'm fairly certain it came up in the 1930s. And I'll go through that as I go along. I did find one building permit for the property from 1957, which was for a 2-story house. And that is the adjacent property, which was originally part of this parcel and then got subdivided out. And that was built by Mrs. Richard Kimball. So the Kimballs did own the property but I don't know how far back they owned it or had possession of it, I should say, I guess. So that's the story about the date of I'm nominating it at the local level under criterion C as a single wall beach house designed in the 20s, 30s period in Hawaii. The house included a number of distinctive features and is typical of its period in its design, materials, workmanship, and methods of construction. The beach house is also exhibited at the local level under criterion A for its associations with the development of beach houses on Oahu during the 20s and 30s. Next slide. The house is rather, well, it's not that unique, but sort of unique in that it does run all the way from the highway to the ocean. And here's an aerial view, a drone view of the house. And you can see it's nestled into a vegetated area. I mentioned that the landscaping is very typical of beachfront as far as the types of plants there, and then alpaca, the beach grape, and I forget what else is there. But, you know, this photo was taken just before the drone went wishing away. And so this is one of the few we had.
Gigu lost control.
Yeah, the wind just took it. And we actually have a nice video showing, you can see the actual bubbles in the water as it almost crashed, but then recovered and came back.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
Yeah, so that was good. But next slide. Here's a floor plan of the house. Essentially, it's a pavilion style house, which is also a common form used in beach houses. It has essentially the one wing is the kitchen and living room. Then the main body of the house is all bedrooms, and the other side wing is also bedrooms. And it's all connected serially, one room to another, but also all the rooms have doors out to the lanai. Next. Here's a view of the house. The lanai was obviously added later. I'm not sure when. The tax office picked up, what year did it pick it up? Oh, 1957. I think in 1957, the other house next door was built. So I suspect when the building inspector came out and looked at that, he said, what is this? And so it was probably built before 57, but it was there in 57. Next. Here you can see the lanai. It has a sandstone coral floor, a flat roof, pipe columns, which is typical of the 50s period. And so I suspect it was probably added close to that time. Next. And here you see the coral stone wall. It's a retaining wall in the back. Steps come down. There's no garage. You just park up on the lawn and then walk down to the house this way. You can see in the background, they have a barbecue. And next. And that's built in. Okay, next. This is the house, a hip roof, composition shingle now, overhanging eaves with exposed rafter tails, single wall house, board and batten, all very typical of the period. The horizontal pane windows in the door, it's actually a single door with a side light on one side. All the windows have changed. They kept the same fenestration, but they're all vinyl windows now. They just had gotten out too, but I don't think it detracts from the house. They essentially put in other double hungs in their place. And overall, considering the integrity, the otherwise very strong integrity of the house, I think this is good. The house sits on a concrete foundation and it has a curb, which is common, especially with beachfront houses. I noticed they'll have like a 6-inch curb before they build the house up. Next. There's a lanai on the ocean side. The wood sliding door windows are still intact. Windows on either side, pair of sliders in the middle. Flat roof again. These are 4x4 columns, which I suspect replaced at some time because of weather. On the interior, the living room occupies most of the one wing. Again, board and batten walls, board and batten ceilings. The floor is vinyl tile. Suspect that was probably added in the 50s, but I don't know. Quite light house. A number of the doors still have the single panel doors. Almost all the doors also have the glass knobs. Next. Here's a view looking the other way with the kitchen in the back. Interior girt for the single wall. The kitchen, I think, was remodeled in the 50s. You have whatever you call it, Formica countertops. The cabinetry looks like it may be from the 50s. Maybe it's earlier. I'm not sure. Next. And they have a pass through a quite elaborate. Goes up and on a pulley chain, and that goes out to the one eye. Here's the living room again. You go to the door to the left, and it'll take you into the first bedroom. Next. And here is the first bedroom. Again, all the board and batten walls are in place. Next slide. Closet door, single wall, a single panel, the door out, same. Next room over is the bathroom. And the bathroom has a door out on the beachfront side to allow access in. I like the towel racks. You have this whole gang of six, so you can have a big group of people here. This is the main bathroom in the house. The shower looks very much original. I don't have the picture, but the medicine cabinet has beveled mirror, so I'm quite sure that's probably original as well. Next. Here you can see the one door coming in, which is not an original door, from the first bedroom, and then the single panel door going into the second bedroom. The second bedroom, again, more of the same. Essentially, board and batten. Next. This one has louvered doors, which aren't original, I'm sure, for the closet. And then the door goes into the third bedroom. And you can see, I'm sorry, oh, go back. You can just see the doorknob to the door going out. All those doors are new. They're not original. The doors leading out to the exterior. Here's the third bedroom. Again, same thing. Very much intact. Next slide. Oh, I'll go back, I guess. There is a door that goes out, but you can see the beds blocking it. Next. And here is a view looking back at the bedroom before. The house is very well maintained. And then a door going the other direction into the final bit, fourth bedroom, which should be in the other wing. Next. And here's that bedroom. This bedroom, you can see this door. I think there's another picture. It goes into a little bathroom. The bathroom's been all remodeled. But again, has the original door. Going back to the fourth bedroom, if you go to the right, you'll go to the final bedroom. Next. Which is this room here. Again, original doors. Next. This has a little sitting nook. And just past this built-in chest of drawers is another door which goes into another bathroom. Next, which I think I, yes. And this bathroom has a door that goes out to the lanai. So if you're drinking out on the lanai, this will be the bathroom you're using to take a break. It has its shower, has a nice little shelf. Yeah. And again, multiple towel racks. Also a window in the shower for ventilation. Next. Then it has a little bench to put your belongings down on and a nice round arch mirror. Next. We've listed around, I don't know, I think close to 10 to a dozen beach houses already on the register. I found pictures of some of them still. This is the oldest one that I know of. This one's out at Covella Bay. It was built by Kahuku Plantation for a plantation manager to use, and it dates from 1918. Hip roof, board and batten, single wall. Next. Here's the interior of that. Next. This is the Ho Beach House, which we just registered a couple of years ago out in Mokulaia, which is from 1926. This is, again, a single wall house. This is just vertical tongue and groove, hip roof, a lanai at the front end. Next. And here you can get a sort of a look at that house as well. Next. Another one we just registered not too long ago is in Lanikai, the Pinkerton Beach Cottage. This is from 1926, board and batten siding. This again follows a pavilion plan. They also added a lanai, which wasn't originally there in the middle. So next, and you can see the interior on this house as well. Again, this big sliding doors, typical. This house got wiped by the 1946 tidal wave. At least the Mackay Wall had to be rebuilt. Next. And this is the Mendonca Beach House out in Mokulaia from 1936. It was done by Lors and Cook Ray Morris. Double pitch hip roof. Again, board and batten siding. Next. And a large living area. And this one in the whole, and the one in Lanikai, both, not Lanikai, this one and another one also have the curbing, which is common. And this one is out by Aina Haina on the Mackay side of the road, the Heilman Beach Cottage. This is from around 1932. I couldn't find a date on this again. It's hard sometimes just because they're not permanent residences. The names don't show up in the city directories at these locations. And in the 30s, we don't have building permits. They have some from 38, 39, but before that, they got wiped out in a disaster. And next, and this is the back of that house, and you can see the lanai was enclosed, but this is also on the register. So that's that.
Anybody have any questions? I got to admit, the one, I can't remember the, do you remember the name of the one I did in Lanikai?
Oh, Dr. Strobe, yeah.
Strobe,
yeah, yeah.
Very similar plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Similar materials. So a little, like, I guess because it has a double pitch roof, it's a little elevated stylistically.
Make sure I forgot about that one.
I can't remember the name. So, do you think, my only question is, do you think the big sliding windows, doors rather, on the ocean side, do you think those replace what would have been the original ones? Because I see that the French doors are...
Yeah, double pane. I was thinking about that too. I don't know. Uh-huh. Yeah, it could have been obvious. They are wood frame, so it could have been part of when the 1950s, when they did the kitchen, they may have redone that.
The same with the ocean side lanai as well, right? That looks to be later.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, they're using a concrete block for the pavers there.
As well, supported on the metal posts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes me think that's like these two.
That could be, yes.
You look like you're agreeing with
I'm me. Agreeing with that. So, yeah. It seems right.
Any other questions before we make them?
I have a question about criterion A. So that was included.
A? Oh, for the beach houses. And just for its associations with the recreation. I talked about it in the forum. Sorry, I didn't talk about it now. But essentially, second houses as beach houses started in the 19th century. Waikiki essentially developed as a community for beach houses. Once automobiles came in, and you had better roads and infrastructure came in. That was the primary reason how Wanikai got developed in the 20s. It was until finally they put electricity, water out there, that you develop it. And so these areas would start developing as a resort, a vacation place, a place to go on the a weekend house. And so you get Wanikai essentially was totally a vacation place when it first started developing. Then Aina Haina, the same way the Heilman House, the Kahuku one, that one they just caught the train from Kahuku Plantation over to where the house was. There was a stop there. And also the Mendoza House, that one is right on the ORNL line. And that whole area section of Mokulei'i was originally ranch lands, but it got subdivided out and made into vacation rental area. In the not rental, but vacation rents housing, and so this is a thing that starts in the 20s and in the 30s, and then continues into the 50s. And there's still beaches houses out along the shore on the north shore and along the east shore of Hawaii. Haina Haina is pretty much gone, permanent residential. Same with Kailua. It's all. I don't think anybody's using it as a. Well, actually. The one I did show you, Pinkerton, is still a beach house. But there's a few. Most of it is now permanent residence. We don't have anything on the register at this point from this section of the island. Maile Kahana, there was a number of beach houses out there and quite a few famous families out there. But in, you're right, 1975, the state condemned a lot of that. Now you have Maile Kahana Beach Park that used to have all housing on it before for essentially the affluent people. And so
I'm glad you brought it up because I think it's part of the social history of Hawaii, an important part of the social history of the class, of certain class of people that got these places, associations of families of wealth.
I'm not sure I'm compelled that it is at a level that really achieves criterion A significance. I guess, is there a context or an existing thematic context that you used to look at to determine this?
No, this is just from previous nominations.
You may deal with it more than I do, but criterion A tends to be the biggest catch-all in that it's also the most open. I don't agree with Sophie's assessment. It's not going to the beach. It's part of the social history of Hawaii. We don't have context developed for everything that needs a context yet.
Yeah, I would agree with
it's
that.
It's more
that
this specific home has no effect or significance on the broad patterns of our history. If this specific home is the reason that we started going to the beach, then maybe that would
I think that the way that I think that it's referenced to the nomination, it doesn't clearly define, like, you can talk about like the suburbs expansion around a major city or like urban renewal or something as being an event in our history. And if you want to classify a period in time where this event of like expansion and development happened, then we can contextualize it around that, but just simply saying that it's a beach house for recreation in and of itself, I don't think is enough. I think it needs to be, if that's the argument you want to make, I think there needs to be more context to it.
Being written into the nomination.
Yes, that talks about that broad pattern in history.
That, but it is part of the broad pattern.
But as written and as read, just simply building a beach house to go to the beach is not in and of itself. How is that different than, say, the OE building a house like in Waikiki in order to catch the trade winds and to have access to the water, or a Lo'i patch or a Taro patch or something like that? You know, I think these distinctions, that's where it's important for these distinctions to be made.
Well, I guess the thing is, do we want to expect them to develop an entire context when it's a kind of understood context?
That's the purpose of the nomination document, though, is to codify and document that history.
Well, and I think just not every thing that ever happened in history is an event is mm-hmm. recognizable as significant enough to qualify something to be on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't feel like the association
I suggest you read the annual little again.
I have like other things for
because
over
it
20
says
years,
the broad current, so
I think it's a little too broad to tie directly to this.
Just to give you background, as we tended to do almost all criteria A and C.
I use a lot of criteria for landscapes, but again, there's some, you know, there's still a threshold that I think would be.
But I think even what Jess was mentioning, that the elite having houses in Waikiki, that's sort of the beginning of this cultural movement here. It's the same as saying, like, Southampton is significant. Is this a place where wealthy people go and have houses? And all those houses in Waimanalo, you find the sort of wealthy families, the kind of Republican Howley members of the Commerce Club people are all buying these houses and
but
developing them. And the Campbell's state and all of this is very much in
not
keeping with the movement.
That's not written in the nomination, though.
It's mentioned.
I'm not saying that's not true, but it's not.
Well, I think I do mention it and say that in the 20s and 30s, this is happening. And I do mention Waimanalo as well as another area where the beach houses were. And I'm thinking I do also nominate places like at past Kapi'olani Park. There's Diamond Head Terrace. Every time I nominate a house there, I'll nominate it as for community development. It's associated with the development of that area. And this is not a specific area. This is an area that extends around the island, which was used for ocean recreation.
Right. And when it's not a specific area, I think it's easier to show that in a nomination because that area may have significance as the way that neighborhood was developed or designed or planned. But when it's sort of out on its own, I think it's a little more tenuous of a connection the way that it's written.
But I think also, if you think about it, the number of these beach houses are fairly limited. And I think you're going to get a scattering because most of those are now bought by other affluent people who are tearing them down and building new houses. And some are actually getting wiped out to the ocean. I think one guy's been trying to sell a house and they can't because it's falling in the ocean. But
so
I think
that would be like C, right? I mean, it's an
the
example,
architecture
right?
is, yes,
C is
but
solid. I'm not questioning
okay.
That.
Right on.
So,
but I
have a difference of opinion here.
But I don't care whichever way the board wants to go on it because all you need is one criteria. So if you don't want to do A, that is fine. But I think there is
as if it changed all when we've been doing things entirely. Because like I said, I think A has always been the most. We have some properties that we only put under A because of it. We won't stand up under C.
Well, I'll say this: if this is recommended to go to the National Register, it won't be in its current state. It is not ready to go to the Park Service
well,
because
we won't send it to the National.
I'm talking to the board about the criteria A argument is not sufficient to really make that point. The criterion C argument is solid. But just in terms of this broader conversation that we're having today, in terms of why things are or are not moving forward, this is the case in point. So it's up to you, like I said.
One thing that would make the board's life and everybody's life easier is that, like many states, and you know, you're just barely getting into the position. If we had some 20th century context statements that were out there. We have some that have been put there.
Well, we have a modernism context study that was produced.
Well,
that's pretty, yeah.
That one, so. But we don't have that many for Hawaii in the 20th century. That might be something that comes out of the state plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could see, we'd talk residential patterns, and then we would talk about wealthy people having beach houses, and then we'd be able to link it to a specific kind.
This is kind of a hard one, too, because by its like nature, beach house, they want to be permitted, not food clusters.
That's kind of a pattern.
It's, yeah, right, right. That's how he sort of it's just
so
a
you
pattern.
Can actually see the subdivisions done now.
Clustered, but most of them was about being isolated. So, I guess I'm in agreement that I think it also just kind of a harder thing to people.
Jester, Jester, Sophie, I just had a quick question that Don's starting to get at. I was, looking at the text from Sophie in terms of, contributing directly to these events. So just kind of thinking about kind of scarcity and rarity. Let's just say for the sake of argument that, there were lots of beach houses in Mauna Kea, this one not being the first, but as over the years they get demolished. They get torn down, that sort of thing. Does scarcity as one of the few residents that speak to this event, does that have any, any weight?
Well, scarcity doesn't impact the context because the context is it's in history. Like this place used to be used as this thing. And so from this period into this is where period of significance comes into effect, right? So for something like this, it could be like, I don't know, as early as like 1900, 1915, all the way through like 1960 or something like that. Say that's the period of significance for the context of folks who lived in the city want to get away from the congestion, so they start to develop these vacation homes in these little pocket communities along the beachfront. That can be your context. Develop and make that argument for that context and why these homes were situated there. If over time the homes are removed and replaced by other homes, that gets into like the integrity of if you're trying to define a historic district. But it doesn't affect the context because the context is the written history of the place, right? The integrity is whether or not something still retains sufficient integrity to be eligible for listing or if it's been changed so much that it no longer is. So the scarcity would only affect whether or not you're trying to list this whole area as a historic district, rather than if this individual resource is a representative example of this larger context. So I guess our question to you is, does the nomination sufficiently document with evidence explicitly what that event in history is, such that it is clearly defined as something significant to wine history? That there was this mass exodus on the weekend, much like Martha's Vineyard or something on the East Coast, and so there's your history. Is that there in the nomination, or does it need to be more vetted out in order to make a case for A? And Shifty's recommendation is that either A be eliminated or that history be more broadly expanded.
I have a couple of comments on that. I agree with you about the issues of scarcity probably wouldn't come into this hugely, but there is a kind of mass thought or general people thinking that, let's say, you had the last blacksmith shop on Maui, that would end up, even though it's not part of why its significance, that would stand out just as the sole surviving house in Lahaina stands out now because of that. So it does affect judgment in some way. I don't think you can get away from it entirely. But the other thing is I read broad patterns when I look at criterion A, and it's not just people like regular people getting off and going to the beach type of thing. This is about class identification, ways people entertained, the way they reciprocated, and the way wealth was managed in Hawaii during that period. I think those are all really significant parts of it. And you link the names of the people that own these places, and you're getting all the people, like I said, that are in the then Commerce Club or the British Club, and all the people that are like trading chips on investments and people who are building status and getting written up in the newspaper when they come back to Hawaii from a vacation to the mainland. So this is a big part of the social history of Hawaii, I think.
Well, I'm not disagreeing that it is. I just don't think that. I think maybe when you read this, you're filling in knowledge that you have about that when you look at it. But to me, it isn't evident in what's written in here
Okay,
that
but I think if it's knowledge you know, and you're filling it in, there's no need to articulate it in incredible depth.
Not everybody knows enough about Hawaii's cultural historical background to be able to fill that information in, which is why it's requested in the nomination, which is what she's
saying. The purpose of the nomination is to document that history so that it's not living in someone's recollection, it's actually on paper. Well, so that future generations can understand these places and why they're important.
I will say Don has done his fair share of providing context. He gave us a whole history of multi-residential property for the Diamondhead properties, right? For the Pietro property. So that was really impressive.
Yeah, but I can't do that for every house.
No,
that's the problem.
I think Don has done more than his fair share. Maybe it's something.
It's in a different nomination. It's perfect.
Yeah, maybe something else that you were nominating a lot of properties under that. That may be why you were willing
yes,
to put the effort into it. But as Don says, I'm happy to go with if you don't feel there's sufficient background in what you've presented, and I can accept that. I think we could just go through experience and
see.
And I think I can revise the nominations very simply to eliminate the A. Take out the check marks and one power sentence or two.
Project. You know, we're reviving the preservation program when I step down as dean, and this is the kind of project that you know, a student could take on as a thesis or as a practical project working with Sophie and working with the office. This would be a good thing to do to help build up more history because we don't have a lot of context developed.
1,000% agree with that, but I feel like we have so much unique history here that we could really use specific Hawaii-based context for, and I'm always reaching for one, hoping it's there and it isn't, so
right.
That would be immeasurably better.
You're right, and Kaikanal and all those standard histories basically don't do that in themselves, they don't provide it.
Yeah, I would also recommend, we now have every county now, we're the first state that has every county as a certified local government. Like all of our local communities that are eligible are in the certified local government program. And they have access to reimbursement grants through our office. This is something that even them and we all could work in partnership with on identifying different topics for developing context studies, because you all are well experienced in the field. You have an idea of what histories are out there that have not yet been documented and told. And if we can provide that information to the CLGs, maybe they could turn that into a project as well. So like UH isn't carrying the whole burden, but it's shared. So
I'm in close contact with both Glenn and Richard over there in Oahu.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's something they'd like to take on.
Yeah.
Well, if this is removed from this nomination, do we delete this information? Because it sounds like that's the beginning of these research projects that you guys are asking for. I mean, I think that it'd be kind of a shame to take this out.
It's possible
all those
to
reports
kind yeah.
of, you know, start somewhere. This is that start.
I think I use Criterion A for the Strode House as well, but that was also because of the whole development of Lonnie County,
right.
Not just each house itself.
You can leave the information in the nomination under the statement of significance section. It's just not making the argument that history makes it eligible for A. So it's completely appropriate. And we've done this with nominations with Stanley before, where with Little Makalapa, you guys saw that nomination years ago, where Stanley put some really great kingdom era Native Hawaiian history into the nomination, because otherwise it would have been erased because the military development there. And we added that as an appendix. That was a more intense example, but we added that as an appendix so that it lived with that nomination.
Don't delete the information.
Just take yep, and say it's not.
I've been trying to hold back on talking about style, but you know, if you look at,
can't wait.
If you look at the guidance, the only ones that the register is quantifying is the capitalized version on the left, and this applies to Stanley's too. So the only thing the register is looking at is colonial, early republic, mid-19th century, late Victorian, late 19th and 20th century revivals, late 19th and 20th century movements, the modern movement, and other.
Yeah.
So a lot of our stuff that we've been naming plantation style or Hawaii regionalism and things like that, I think need to fall under other for the capitalization part.
Yep.
And then we need to, and I'm going to propose, I'll do it now, that this board convene a committee to talk about architectural styles in Hawaii so that we can be on the same page. Because this takes up a
All
lot of
interesting the
time.
same thing.
In every single meeting, it takes up a lot of time. And we let staff do it in the past, long before YouTube. There have been people who have been throwing out, we used to call it the double pitch roof or the bell cast roof, Hawaiian style. Then we realized that's culturally insensitive because it's not Hawaiian. So then we started calling it Hawaii regionalism. But some of the other properties that are coming out, so those post-war sort of plantations, sort of quasi-Wrightian, I might say, a little bit Wrightian, all those things are a kind of style that we can recognize now because we have distance of time. We can
Yeah.
see they assemble together.
This was my SAHP presentation a few years ago when I presented at the Society of Architectural Historians conference, and I forget which one it was, somewhere in Pennsylvania, I want to say, is there is a huge gap in Bulletin 16A in terms of how you identify historic resources generally. If you want to list a fish pond, you have to list it as like industrial, like essentially animal farming, and that's not what a fish pond is.
Extractive industry.
Yeah, it's like an industry industrial, and it's like that's not appropriate for Hawaii to kind of do that kind of thing. So I completely support you. I think SHPD would be in complete support and would encourage like investment in our staff and supporting that effort and providing, our knowledge. But I think that is really important. And if we set a precedent here, we could take that to Park Service and say, you really need to update 16A, include, more diverse and
Right.
accurate styles.
But I know for a fact they're only quantifying the capitalized left-hand column. So whenever you show in Hawaiian plantation or any of these other terms, but that's simply not something that they're quantifying. So this is other. And I think I would say other plantation.
Or like Hawaii or Pacific plantation or something like that. Because even then, like we're in arguments over like the South and Louisiana over what is plantation. Because depending on whether you're in Louisiana or you're parts of the South, plantation
So you
style
could call it
architecture is very different.
Hawaii plantation, I'd be
Yeah.
open to that. And then the only thing that starts to differentiate it from craftsman is there's usually plantation with some boulders, a little more detailing. And then again, there's gray area, but they tend to get elevated at some point. Stanley kept referring to vernacular because in the broadest sense, it means every day, right? But that doesn't exactly
Yeah, I think Park
answer
Service
the.
discourages that term.
I don't know. They're pretty open to using it broadly across the board as a stopgap for anything that isn't identified in 16A. I can't remember which publication or
Rolling
preservation brief
Stone.
it was, but
Oh,
they started
nasty.
to accept the whole vernacular architecture movement. What was that in the 80s or 90s?
70s, I remember
Yeah.
it. I was at the first meeting at the Vernacular
Yeah.
Architecture Forum.
So
And
yeah,
I was
it's
Del
been used
Alpin
as a
and all those
crutch.
guys, but even there was an effort to try to differentiate true vernacular from mass-produced vernacular. There was the people who were pushing for terms like popular and things like that, or industrial.
So do we want to make that motion? Is that the next thing we should do? Already.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Why don't you go
Okay.
ahead if you
First
want.
question. Second. I'd like to make a motion to, what would the term be for returning it for revisions?
You could say defer
Defer.
the nomination until the next review board meeting to give the applicant the chance to make revisions, and then you can say what the revisions are to the nomination.
So that those words that she just said.
Do we
Okay.
have a second for that motion?
And then, but then the changes would be to remove or expand criterion A further discussion.
Donald already said he's going to.
I'm not going to expand it. So delete it.
Well, I mean, you can make the motion to say expand or remove and leave it up to Don. And then Don can use his judgment on following that directive.
Exactly.
You don't think you don't think we could vote to accept it pending?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly easy check mark to remove.
There were issues with that, as we discussed earlier, right? So I think we have to.
I don't think I was the issue.
I would still, I mean, Shifty's perspective would be that criteria is a pretty significant part of the nomination. It's like a make or break part. I would recommend like these significant elements be required to be altered before you actually list, regardless of who it is. So we're not playing favorites. There's nobody who could try to argue that or make an appeal that the review board is letting certain people do some things and other people not do others. So that would be my recommendation, but ultimately it's up to you in the way you vote.
So I make a motion to defer the consideration of this nomination to the next meeting to give the applicant a chance to make their revisions as discussed.
Grab a second.
Go for it, Nick.
Say again.
I'll second.
Okay, now we have a chance for discussion again. Okay, it's all relative what you consider significant, but to my mind, taking the X out of the A is not a major change.
should we accept it and then?
Mm-hmm. That's what we've done in the past.
Well, he might have to also go through the nomination and remove any reference to criterion A as well.
I think that's a sentence in the summary significance.
I would still, I can't confirm or deny that at this point.
Okay.
The other thought is that if he removes and he mentioned it, would we still accept it?
Under criterion C.
So.
But would we accept that criterion A is still checked? Because that's different than the previous thing we did accept, because that was fine either way. It wouldn't matter one way or the other, whether it changed or not. This does matter. So.
I mean, we're all right. I mean, that's right. True. On the other hand,
yeah, come on.
We have the meeting so rarely, twice a year.
It's quarterly. It's four times a year.
We
missed one meeting because we had a weird.
Oh, we may have more weird. But anyway, it just seems unnecessarily bureaucratic when we could make that change. When we could have had that change stated in the record.
Didn't we just talk about conditional approval not being something we can do?
Well, then we're going to just add another layer of effort to the few people that do nominations. Just making it harder.
Are we going to apply that to everyone? I mean, what's the threshold for conditional?
I'm just saying to everyone, same thing. I think the threshold is if it doesn't follow the basic outline and texture and quality, or doesn't identify the places, date, and makes misassumptions. We've had those. Mm-hmm. You'll see some of those.
I'm sure. I just
that just don't fit. The only thing that doesn't fit here is our following criterion A.
Okay, well, I'm not obviously conditionally approving. I'm not sure how that works yet, so I'm not going to do that personally.
Well, we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion?
I'm done, but that's where you're going to go.
Take a vote.
Sure.
All those in favor of the motion? Raise their hand. So let it say three.
Oh, it fails.
Fails. No.
It's
no,
passed for deferring.
Huh?
We need unanimous consent on all of them for them to pass.
We don't have Trish here.
Yes.
So it's been denied fully.
Yes.
So you have to resubmit from the beginning.
Hmm?
If you want it to pass, you'll have to resubmit.
Or there could be another motion.
either if I were to vote for it, we're still gonna have to take it back. So
yeah.
Doesn't make any difference.
But not
it's deferring, it's not restarting, right?
It's defer is better.
Is it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because like Sophie says, otherwise start over with a whole new nomination.
Yeah.
Deferring just means he can make the correction, like as we discussed in the beginning, essentially, because he's listing it for criteria A and C, what Adrian is saying is that she doesn't agree with criteria A because there's not enough evidence in the nomination to support criteria A. And as just presented at the beginning, we don't want to conditionally accept things on the promise that the nominator will fix it after it's been.
So what was deferring? What
so
was deferring,
deferring would mean that he has the opportunity to fix it, and then at the next meeting
we pick up here.
It would pick up from this point, and you would just vote on it, and then it would just go through.
Would he have to come back and present again?
No.
All right, then I that's. Correct the vote, I'll vote.
So unanimous then.
Then he gets then if he then if he gets a perverse wish that follows up on it, he can come back with A.
I mean the other option would be to rewrite the rules to get allow Shifty to deny nominations until they're in a state where they're ready to go. That's a discussion for another day.
I would do it with Adrian another time.
Yes.
What's the next one? Not to.
The one you have. Oh.
Okay. The Hawaii Yacht Club is at 1739 C Ala Moana Boulevard. It was originally built in 1958 as a single-story building, and then the second story was added in 1965. The original architect was James Morrison, and then in 1965, Tom Wells did the addition. Morrison came to Hawaii in 1939. As a number of architects did, he came as part of a group that was working with the Pacific Naval Contractors and worked with them during the war. And then after the war, he decided to stay. His first job in Hawaii, he took Phil Fisk's place in the FHA and worked at the FHA for 2 years. And then from 1947 to 1953, he was the head architect for the Territorial Department of Public Works. And then he went out on his own with Gershom Martin as a partner. I haven't done much research on him. I haven't found out a lot of buildings that Morrison did. So this is interesting for me to find this one. Tom Wells worked out of Ossipoff's office for a number of years and went on his own. In addition to doing this building, he also did the renovation in addition to the Waikiki Yacht Club. So, yes, among other things. Thomas Square restrooms he did. He also did the Palo Alto apartments.
Didn't he work on the outrigger as well?
No, I don't think he worked on the outrigger. But
was he working in Ossipoff's office at the time?
He was, but I don't think he was doing that project. One, though, I have heard his name associated with is the IBM building. And he was working on that project. Again, this is being registered at the local level under Criterion C as a good example of a yacht club designed during the post-World War II period in Hawaii and rendered in a Hawaii modern style. This includes a number of distinctive features and is typical of its period in its design, materials, workmanship, and methods of construction. I also originally had this under Criterion A for its associations with recreational boating, which the staff didn't like. And in this case, I just said, screw it, and took it out. And
of course, that
yes. But again, I think it's something to consider. I think the clubs has a strong association with the history of Hawaii it itself, and I think this is important. When it comes to certain things, how do they perceive themselves? And I think that's an important aspect, that they do perceive themselves as starting with Klakaua. Klakaua had annual yachting races and had the Hawaii Yachting and Rowing Association. When Klakaua died, that sort of went out, although Queen Kapi'olani did keep an interest in yachting and had a yacht regatta every year at Klakaua's birthday. Following annexation, there was renewed interest in yachting. And in 1901, the Hawaii Yacht Club started. And David Kwananakoa was the vice commodore. And Prince Kohio was also a member of the club. And that club will last until 1917, when we enter the war. With the war, it gets disbanded. And it doesn't pick up again until after World War II. But in the late 30s, the Paulsons started the Cruising Club, which after the war will join with the newly formed Hawaii Yachting Club. And I found it interesting that Hawaii Yacht Club from 1901 to 1917 was responsible for starting the Transpac race, which is a very famous race from California to Hawaii every other year. It was started by Clarence McFarland, which I had an interesting story on, which I haven't seen written yet, but some members told me McFarland went to the mainland to start the club, and San Francisco is where they were going to originally start the race from, but the earthquake had happened, and so they went down to Los Angeles and set it up with the Los Angeles Floating Club. McFarland, when he came back, was off course. And at first he thought that the earthquake had destroyed Hawaii because here's where it's supposed to be. And then finally he figured out that they were no longer in the right spot and then found the islands again. But it had to be a bit of a shock. But anyway, McFarland in 1942 started the Cosette Club Cup, which the architect for the building, James Morrison, had married Paulson's daughter. And when she was born, they started a race with a club, a cup in her honor. And so every year there was the Cosette Club Cup. And that lasted till she was 18, I think. And then they gave her the cup. And at that time, they changed the name to the Clarence McFarland Cup, which is still going on today. So it's a continuity of tradition that does go back.
How did the Trans-Pacific Cup get transferred over to the Waikiki Yacht Club?
I don't know. I think they because actually it's on the Hawaii Yacht Club is on the Transpac mole. And so yeah. But I think they're still involved in it. I don't know. You think the what
that's where it's
Waikiki?
Waikiki
Yacht
Club.
Yeah. Well, it's right across the channel.
Leslie's great great grandfather was part of that too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, here you can see a picture. The little blue rectangle shows where the Hawaii Yacht Club is. The boats moored across the channel, that's the Waikiki Yacht Club. So they're right next to each other. And again, it's on state land. It's being leased. Next slide. This is the yacht club. The fence demarcates the property line, the brown fence. That was put up in 1987, I think. Yeah. And then with the club is further in, they have moorings around the club. Next. Here's that fence.
So it'd be
original? 1987. There was no fence before. Next. Then here's the club. The first floor is the original building. Originally, it had a hip roof. And then they tore down the hip roof and built Tom Wells' design, the second story. Next, reinforced concrete building with precast members, structural members. Here you can see how open it is on the first floor. It's also equally open on the second floor. The second floor is accessed by stairs up either end at the end of the building. To the left is what they call a poop deck. And I think the next slide will show it. Yes, and that was added later also. That was added in 2007. And they put the roof on it has louvers so they can open it and close it. Next. Here's another view from, this is from Magic Island, looking across at the boat at the clubhouse. Next. And here's the backside, the kitchen wing on the second floor projects out on the back. They use down below for work area. And here you can see that work area. Next. This is the front doors going in. This was taken almost a year ago. Christmas coming. But the original doors, original scored concrete walkway going up to it. Next. You go inside. The main office is to the right. The ship store is just past that. And trophy cases at Akoa, similar to the Waikiki Yacht Club. Next. Here you can see the office. They have post boxes for the people that are staying in boats or visiting. Pass through and a Dutch door, and the interior of the yacht, of the office should be next. It's lined with wood and has a drop ceiling. Next. And here's the ship's store. It was closed at the time, but you get a sense of what it is. And here's looking back towards the ship's store and the office. You can see the trophy cases. The floor has been redone. It's laminate now. Next. And here you can see the open, this is the snack bar area for the club. The door at the far end goes out the other side. Snack bar, kitchen is to the right. Next. Here's looking the other way. The snack bar has a pass through the two windows. The third window on the far side of the roped column is actually a pass-through from the bar, which I'll show you in a minute. Here's the kitchen area. Next. And here you can see from the other side, the kitchen is essentially intact as well. There's a bar to the left of the kitchen, the tiki room. And next. And here's the tiki room. It has a bamboo ceiling, door goes out the back, decorated in a tiki manner. Next, it has its koa bar still in place. Upstairs, you go upstairs at either side of the building, either the Diamond Head or the other end. There's sliding aluminum doors, which are original, and also a door with a porthole. There used to be one on the other side, too. They took that door down because everybody's going through the sliding doors. Next. Inside here is the second floor. Again, new laminate floors. The wait station is behind the co-op partition on the right. And again, totally open, going out with a lanai. Next. And here is that lanai. And looking in here, you can see the bar again at the far end corner of the dining room. Next. And the bar has essentially a koa veneer finish to it. And again, you get a closer look at that koa finishings. Next. And here you can see a zigzag bar they have, which is also of koa. That's it.
That's that tea. That's hmm? Probably
good. Huh?
Feels like a trip stack.
What was it?
Next.
The bar top itself, not the rail.
Huh?
Is it teak or core?
I believe it's core. That's what they told me.
Could be. Yeah.
Imitating teak.
Yeah.
Competitive.
Interesting.
Which do you think is not? The rail or the bar?
Oh. You're thinking it looks like a deck.
Oh.
Deck.
Oh, okay.
With the,
oh, okay.
But I get the name of the stuck in between the boards.
Tar?
Huh?
There's a term for that? Okay.
Who made it a rogue.
Oh, okay.
And stuff it in between.
Okay.
And tar as well. Mm-hmm.
So again, we're nominating this under criteria C as a clubhouse built in Hawaii style, essentially very open, made out of concrete of the period.
Probably a Hawaii style. No, probably other style.
I don't know. What did I call it?
They call it modern or something. Right?
Well, probably modern.
Modern.
Yeah, modern woodwork.
Modern movement. Modern movement is.
Yeah,
that's the capitalized sign of modern mm-hmm. movement.
Yeah,
modern movement. Then you can decide what you want to call it.
Yeah.
From there.
Did Tom Wells, but he's not from Hawaii. He's from
no, he's originally? From the mainland. Yeah, I can't remember. Grad, he may have been. Huh?
Was he also a Berkeley grad?
I'm not sure where he. No. Wait, I don't have it on the form.
I just made sure that I couldn't find it.
He did some houses as well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did a lot.
No.
I don't think we have to identify one of the modern styles.
No.
I think he ended up going to Oregon, but I don't know where he's from.
I guess closest would be brutalism.
The concrete block.
I don't. Well, it's kind of more of the international sort of.
It,
feel because of the
it say where we went.
Yeah, the horizontality of it. Yeah.
I think broadly international style.
Yeah.
The only option that give under
oh, it is. Okay. Okay, studied with Killingsworth.
It's not mm-hmm. Actually, it's formalist a little bit. It looks like I.M. Pei went there to get inspired for the Jefferson Hall.
Yeah.
Probably had a drink there while he was working on his design.
Maybe.
I guess that's formalist.
Mm-hmm. When Waikiki up was nominated, was that just C or was that ANC?
I think it was ANC.
C. Mm-hmm.
See, on this one, I would be more coincidentally the applicable because it's a institution, but it's associated with building and it's
well the building wasn't built though for the Hawaii Yacht Club. The building was built for the state government and then it was later occupied by the Hawaii
Yacht Club. Built no the Hawaii Yacht Club paid for the building.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
the state leased the land to them.
Yeah. Ownership versus.
That's right.
I think it was. I think what it was that the push that they were trying to make was it was significant because it had ties to royalty.
Oh,
no,
that's
it
right.
Wasn't royalty. It was recreational boating.
And that it was a huge flagship for boating to have begun in the first place. But I argued that boating and sailing has been a part of.
That's right.
Culture since the start of their culture and time. So it didn't.
So it was just the way that arguments placed.
Yeah, it doesn't. It didn't carry enough. I think I can read the original letter to you if you'd like. I have it right here. One second. Wikipedia.
Yeah, I mean, actually.
History. The club itself may have a significant impact on the history of Hawaii. We find it hard to agree with the statement that this building has made any significant impact or contribution to the broad patterns of history. The building was built by the club on reclaimed lands. However, the building has not contributed. For this, we have the decision to exclude criteria A. For the significance that it has ties to the late king with little impact on the historic impact. This includes the history of yachting. The club has more of an impact than the building itself.
That's right.
Prior to this building its location, where was the one from the
I forget. I know the earlier one was out at Pearl Peninsula. I don't know exactly where they were operating out until they got the building.
The one back at
the
1901 and 1917.
Yeah.
Could have been in Honolulu Harbor, mightn't it?
It may have.
That's where it is growing.
Yes. But it may have been at Kihei too. I don't know where they were working at it, but I didn't see anything.
So Sophie, when we were talking about this, my brain is now starting to get, weren't we talking too about some of the history that was previously identified was associated with a club at a previous location instead of, was that it rather than the building was built before the club occupied it?
But I think a building, even though it was built in a certain year, if it's occupied by someone, it still has associations with that earlier
No,
period.
The association does. The building doesn't.
The association has the ties to the cultural history and the history of yachting,
yeah.
But the building is not significant, nor does it have those ties. The building's ties start the year the building was...
I would agree there.
Yeah.
The building
the association has to fit with...
Yeah.
That was
it fits with the period of significance of the building.
Yeah,
That's
and
why I debated to remove A, because...
Yeah.
Culturally, sailing and water sports and all of that is totally included with Hawaii's culture. But as far as that specific building, including that and having that impact, I would have to argue I disagree.
You had a bigger context to refer to.
Yeah.
What yacht clubs in the post
right.
Or World War II era.
Yeah. Or the institution itself had a previously established significance,
right.
Which
that,
maybe
yeah.
It hasn't.
I'll make note of better including that note in the future. That one's on me.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see how it could that notion of previous history could be abused, right? I remember once surveying a town in
oh,
Georgia,
true.
And they wanted me to list the site of the original house, which is no longer there.
Right.
They had torn it down and built a well out of the bricks for the chimney. But the rest of the town, which is a wonderful, like, mill town, they didn't even think was significant, but that was what was significant.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the whole history of the town is embedded in this well.
Yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I can see both sides.
But anyway, it's not for A anyway.
It's not significant because it was with him when he was a kid.
Actually, they rebuilt it on their own place.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln's childhood home.
Well, their childhood home would still be eligible under B because they're associated with a very important person, but it wouldn't be under, neither home would be eligible under A for their involvement in the civil rights, for its association with the civil rights movement or with like the Revolutionary
no.
War or something like
it's
that.
Completely
disconnected. Yeah.
So for C, I mean, do we have any, I feel like C? Sense and that's what's in here.
I
agree with
your
question. We don't
want to
make it go home.
Yeah, well, Shipti, I think fully based on like
yeah.
The edits that we received, we're recommending too that the nomination is complete. So
yeah.
We
all
have
right.
No issue.
Let's have a
I'll make a motion that the Hawaii Yacht Club be added to the Hawaii places, register of historic places under criteria, at least criteria.
What level of significance would you recommend? Is it
local?
Local?
Everything's local.
And this isn't recommended for national?
Nah. Don't want to cause any
okay.
Problems.
We have a second.
People.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I'll just have a quick comment. One, I'll just point out that Stanley's nomination wasn't posted on the website. Actually, the original rough draft was posted on the website for this one. So I actually did read Don's original version. I'm a little disappointed to see A removed, but I understand it's evaluated for C. So I think removing A certainly, I think, lose some of the importance of it. You know, as it, there are mergers that seem to apply and works that still. But just, you know, we're evaluating under C, so that's where all those.
Yeah, You think we know what you said?
So he said that Stanley's nomination wasn't posted on the website, but he was able to read the Hawaii one. He had some comments on removing A, which might remove some of the significance, but he sees why it would make sense to remove it. Good summary, bad summary. Did I miss anything?
Good summary. We hear every other word.
Yeah, your mic cuts out a lot. I'm doing my best.
Okay. Yeah. Mostly, I was just saying I'm sort of disappointed to see A removed, but I understand where the nomination before us for C.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's call the question. All those in favor of listing the property and the criterion C for a local level of significance?
What's
You know, we have some people here waiting patiently through all our discussion. I wonder if you could come to that. We didn't arrange this earlier, but which property are you representing?
Oh, the next one.
Okay. So why don't we?
Okay. And then
for the Walker people.
The Walker.
I was about to say, well, it's about 12, so if you want a break for lunch.
Well, I don't know. We should.
It probably can take. I'm going
to
go through the whole multiple
I don't know
nomination.
If they want to have to be here for that long time.
Oh, okay.
And do we want to do the nominations for the people who are in the room and maybe take a break?
That's
Does anybody need a comfort break though, real quick, to use the restroom, get water? There's cookies if you want to snack.
I recommend we do this people in the room.
Okay. Yeah, can we take a?
Yeah.
Do you want to make a motion for a 5-minute break?
I'll make a motion for a 5-minute.
And Adrian seconded that.
Okay.
All in favor of a 5-minute break?
Okay. There's cookies over on the side, too, if you guys need a snack.
Yeah. Restrooms or?
Right through the store, there's a women's restroom. I would just recommend everybody try to use this one.
The men's room is in the main building.
The men's room is in the main building. There's a security guard in the door.
Yeah, it's on the second one. Okay. I had number two on the second
one. No, fine. You're fine.
Yeah.
Which one?
The parking garage.
Good.
I just want the two Manoa ones.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Those are yours.
Yes. But they'll be there. No, I'm going to connection to that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Just as a reminder, this is the property that you guys denied prior. So this is a resubmission of La Pietra, which is why there are no remarks from me. This was reviewed prior to my time. But there's a copy of the nomination there that will float down.
Creature.
Creature.
So there is no interior. So I wasn't here for this discussion.
I think this was the interior integrity. You felt that it had lost too much integrity from interior alterations, I believe.
It's the first or the second one.
This was
only one. Oh, you might. Oh, you're dying. Yeah, this is for La Pietra. This is the only one.
Oh, okay.
I stopped sending the other ones. I got a bunch more.
You might want to fill in about this endeavor.
Might want to give the background.
Give you a little background.
That's what I was planning to. I'm sorry, Graham, Nick, Bill. You'll have to listen to this again.
So
this will be the third time Bill's heard it.
I appreciate it because it will be the first time I've heard it.
We're back in session. As long as Nick is alive and well, we're good to go.
Maybe.
Nick,
are you here?
Sign of life.
Anything.
And I guess we've permanently.
He has seen this presentation before, so I think he'll probably remember it.
Yeah, in the first part, I'm doing the multiple property event. Did you explain what that is?
Yeah, I explained that so he turns.
Just as long as he's backed by the vote.
Yeah, she has the nomination with her as well, so it's a quick study.
Okay. Adrian, this is a different type of nomination. There's, besides individual properties, there, you can also do districts, which would be a conglomeration of buildings. And there's also a thing called multiple property nominations.
Okay, I'm familiar with it, actually.
Oh, okay, good. This is a multiple property nomination. Okay, you're familiar?
Yes.
That'll save a lot of time. We have like around five multiple property nominations in existence here. And this is one which we did for just La Pietra Townhouse. And the reason we're doing it as a multiple property rather than as a historic district, because it's essentially 19 duplexes, is because, number one, owner consent.
Okay.
And also for the tax, property tax is only given to single family and duplexes and not to districts. So that's why I chose to do a multiple property. However, in looking at the multiple property, I'm hoping you'll look at it more as a district nomination, that we're trying to eventually get the entire complex registered, but we're doing it unit by unit.
So it would be like a de facto district, but it would
yes.
be multiple. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, then we'll go.
So good.
No. So good. Yeah.
Okay, we don't need this one because you understand what a multiple property nomination is. Good. Just to give you a little background, I did a whole context on multifamily dwellings. And one of the earlier ones was Ocean View Court in Waikiki, which was essentially townhouses, but they're attached dwellings. And they were rented as apartments. And this was to get around the apartment law, which at that time required you had to have 60% of the neighbors agree to having an apartment, which was just about impossible. So instead, they called these multifamily dwellings rather than apartments. And that was successful. Yes. Then I looked at townhouses in Hawaii. Townhouses wouldn't go. Is this my new one? Oh, okay. I thought I changed it. Okay.
What are you looking for?
I was looking for the Tiji Shien. I thought I had that up next. But maybe not. Okay. There's Nick.
We're not met anyone.
Huh? Yes.
for his work online. Because, well, are they making you change the period of significance then to include the Lahaina fire? If they're making you write about it.
The Section 213 report identified that instead of changing the period of significance to necessarily include 2023, to actually move the period of significance back to include Native Hawaiian history and the significance of Lahaina pre whaling and missionary era. So it could get into the Kingdom of Hawaii and even before unification.
We can go with it as it is.
Yeah.
It is. Okay. I guess. Anyway.
Nick, are you back?
It doesn't matter.
I've been back from the beginning. I've been.
Okay. In 1953, the co-op law passed in Hawaii, which allowed co-ops, which started to allow more high-rise apartments to be developed. In 1961, that changed. They allowed condominiums, horizontal property. The main difference between a condo and a co-op is, in a co-op, you're a shareholder in the entire building, but you don't own your unit. You just own stocks in the building. With the co-op, or condo, you actually own your apartment. It's real estate, so you can buy and sell it. There's a lot of other differences, but that's the main one. Once the condo law came in, most people thought about it in terms of apartments. Henry Kaiser is one of the first ones that said, oh, we can also do this horizontally rather than vertically. And so he developed these Terasalanai in Hawaii Kai, which was the earliest townhouses we had. These are essentially four units in one building. And next. And through the 60s, some other people started doing co-ops. In 1963, cluster housing was passed, which gave more density for open space. Unfortunately, most of the open space the developers used as parking lots. And this is the Tropicana Village from 1965, which was one of the first cluster thing, but essentially, again, it's a townhouse where the units are all attached. Next, out in Hawaii Kai, Henry Kaiser did several more of these. This is Kauhali Kai, which is now called Marina Palms, again, where you have townhouse. Next, another one also in Hawaii Kai, Koko Isle, which John Carl Warnicki laid out. This is from 1967. And it's a fairly nice one. It goes around a big circle. Next. And here's the other end of that circle. So you can see the type of units that were being developed there. Next. An interesting fact at that time, because they didn't have a condominium or a townhouse law, they had to go get a variance to build a community center because it was all residential. So they had to get a variance for the community center, which now you don't have to do. Next. And here's another one. This one's by John Tatum, who also used to work in a Asapa's office. That's called The Moorings, which is also out in Hawaii Kai. And then John Ramal did these out in Hawaii Kai called Village Green. Most of these, Hawaii Kai was all leasehold. Most of these units, when they're being sold, were running around $30,000, $40,000. La Pietra is going to be developed at the same time at 1970s when it actually goes on the market, but they're over 100,000 a unit. So you can see the difference. I think it's by far the best example of a townhouse development in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Next. Okay, that's another example of. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the only co-op that's on the register, only condo that's on the register at this time. And this is La Tihishian. This was put on, I forget what year, but they were hopeful to get the residential tax credit. And immediately after this went on, the county council changed the law to say only single family and duplex. So this is the only high-rise apartment that's on the register and probably the only one that'll ever get on the register.
This is state and natural?
This is I'm not sure if it's on the national.
Be able to list national just
probably could. I don't know if it is.
No, I mean, neither. We should be able to get more national register listings, all right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's these.
Well, they can be listed, it's just they don't get the tax benefits.
Right.
It's property tax, but they're still eligible for the state. Well, as long as the state historic preservation tax credit is still mm-hmm. around, and the federal tax credit is eligible for property owners for communal spaces that are run by the co-op or HOA, because there it has to be claimed by an income producing entity and it can't be residential, but the common spaces can be utilized, the historic tax credit, federal historic tax credit.
You mean the investment tax credit?
Yes, and then the individual units could utilize the state historic preservation tax credit because that's both residential and commercial.
Not the abatement, but the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then I had people at 1350 Ala Moana, which was designed by Yamasaki. People on that board were interested, but they got a lot of blowback from other owners, and so I haven't heard from them in over a year now. But so that's a problem. This one, Latihishian here, you can see the ocean side. Most all the, most of the lanais have been pushed out. They originally had lanai, and the people have expanded their living rooms out to include the lanai. In this building, there's zero original apartments. There's pieces. I had one or two that had original kitchens, which were separated from the living room by shoji. There's a couple that have shoji doors in their closets in the bedroom. But aside from that, they've been almost entirely redone. La Pietra, in addition to its associations with townhouse development, have it also significant under with its associations with historic preservation. It was one of the earliest preservation efforts that were successful in Hawaii. Originally, when La Pietra townhouse was going to be developed, La Pietra's the townhouse development is down here. Originally, the townhouse development was going to wipe out La Pietra and have townhouses on the entire property. The developer, Bert Williams, had authorization. Punahou School at this time owned La Pietra, which Dillingham had given to Punahou. Dillingham still owned this, but he was going to combine the two properties and make a townhouse out of it. Nancy Bannock led the charge to try and save La Pietra, and eventually was successful. Now it's La Pietra School for Girls, thanks to Mrs. Richard Cook and Mrs. Garner Anthony, who put together the whole school concept. As a star bulletin noted in the obituary for Burton Williams, his townhouse proposal came at the beginning of a rapidly increasing environmental awareness by the general public. Williams could have proceeded under the existing zoning at the time, 1967, but decided to go for a master plan in keeping with the area. And so he reduced the size of the development. And I think also because of the Dillingham's impact, that he was very careful in how he handled the whole situation. I found this of interest and don't need that. Yeah. Go ahead. You have a lot to do. The landscaping was done by ECBO, and it's very well landscaped. All the units are duplexes, two-story. When you go around, this is the beginning. This is when you first come in. This is the first two townhouses, and then yes. You go around a corner and you go up a straight line. La Pietra is on the right side. You have townhouses here, and then it'll go around a curve and make essentially a big circle. Next, here you can see it coming down. There's a little offshoot that goes down this road, and then it keeps going down, going back towards the entrance. Next. And so you can see how it's laid out. It's laid out very much in a more residential style than most townhouses. Continue. And then you're coming back out to the exit. Coming down the straightway towards Kapiolani, with Kapiolani Park on the left now. And here you can see all the ones in pink are registered now. Also, since I made this map, this unit's also registered now. So we have, of the 39 units, 21 are now on the register. This is the one we're working on today. The townhouses, the outsides, they have double pitch hip roof, lava rock on the first floor, wood siding on the second floor, and very open. Next, here's another view you can see. There's lanai front and back off the living room, and the balconies off the bedrooms on the front as well as the back. Next, here's another view. You see that some of the houses have mezzanines, which was an option you could have, so the balcony runs all the way across rather than just halfway across. Next. And here you can see a front door. There's only one unit that doesn't have this door. One of the people that we registered around a year ago actually didn't have that door, and she felt compelled to have that door and spent $35,000 getting it. Then when she got it, she specified a dull varnish, and they had put a shiny varnish on it, so she sent it back to have it redone. So here's the doors. Next. Other changes that have happened to the townhouses, all the balconies were replaced. Jeff Nishi was the architect for that. The balconies originally were wrought iron. He just had to bring the balconies up to code. And this is the balcony on the...
Similar design?
Huh?
Was it a similar design?
Not the same, but similar, yeah. It was wrought iron, yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah, they were good. Then the roofs were all re-roofed. And that's actually a rubber. It's called Euro Shield, but it looks like a shake. And I think they do a good job with it. I'm recommending it to people now. But again, so that's another change that has happened on all of them. And it's been accepted. Next, the floor plan is a major character defining feature of the house. Essentially, you go in the main entry, your living room is to one side. Some of them are flipped the other way, but some are on the right, some are on the left. But then you have a hallway going down to the dining room, kitchen, which you can also access from the living room. You have one bedroom downstairs with a powder room. Sometimes the utility room is here, sometimes it's facing this way. That's essentially the variation there. Then you have a stairway going up. There's straight stairs, I'll show you in a minute. There's also a circular stair some houses have. Upstairs, originally, two bedrooms. Some houses, as I said, also have a mezzanine covering up half. Balconies off the bedrooms, both sides.
Got rooms in the wet box.
Oh, yes, it's there. Go ahead.
Grant's favorite part is the wet bar.
When we did the nomination, one of the things, areas for multiple property nominations is registration requirements. And we indicated in the nomination that the new roofs are okay, the balconies are okay. We also said, there's also been an addition of carports, which was done in 1982, and we said that is fine. We also indicated that they should all keep the scale, keep their lava rock, the exterior wall finishes, and also the relationship to the street, that these are all things that should be considered highly important. On the interior, we indicated that there should be a lot of leeway because a lot of these have changed. However, in fact, there is no completely intact. There are some that are very close, but there's nothing that's completely intact. But we indicated that there has to be leeway this way. But what is important is the indoor-outdoor relationship, the flowing space, the sense of airiness. And so that was that. Okay. When you go in the house, this you can see the hallway that goes down towards the kitchen. There's two or three units that we've registered that have cut off this hallway, but we still registered them. Here's an example. There's the powder room, and this is taken from the bedroom door, but you can see they closed off, and they had extra storage on the other side. Next, here's another one, which actually rerouted the stairs and put the stairs in this area, the powder room to the right. Next, the dining room, again, very open. The dining room kitchen, you have access to the lanai and also to the backyard through sliding doors. You have lava rock walls, open beam ceilings. Originally, the kitchen was separate from the dining room. There was a partition wall. Next. Here you can see that partition wall, which makes it hard because it's mirrored. And that seems to have been something that may have been original because I think two other partition walls that still exist are also mirrored. Yeah, in the 70s, yeah. So that is something that has changed. Almost all of them have new kitchens. I think there's one or two that still have the original cabinets and still have the partition wall, but essentially everything else has changed. The living room, you have the wide look, two-story windows here next, and from the other direction as well. Some of the houses next.
Another question. So these are different houses. These are not the one we're talking about.
No, this is not the ones. I'm just showing you examples that have been registered. I'm sorry. Yeah, these are all registered already. Here you can see the flow from the living room to the dining room area in that relationship. Next. Number of the houses have mezzanines. This was an option that was available when the houses were bought. Here's another example of a mezzanine. Next. And here's a third. This house originally had a circular stair. They changed it. It's a new stair. But we put this on as well. Next. Here's what the original spiral stairs. There's, I don't know how many. I think so far we found two or three that still have the spiral stair intact. But most of them, next. Oh, there's another example of another house with the spiral stair with the mezzanine. And here is the original stair, which was a straight run. And then it went dog-legged and came up to the two bedrooms. That's actually an original finish, the teak. And again, there's only three or four houses that have that. Most everything else, the finish has totally changed. Here's the wet bar. This is what an original wet bar looked like. Some houses have totally eliminated it. A lot of them have kept the wet bar, but they've upgraded it. Here's an upgraded one. Also, the stairs are upgraded. They replaced the stairs, but same location, same straight run. Here's another one where the stair actually moved. They shifted it over. The wet bar they made into shelving. This is also on the register. Here's another one that upgraded the wet bar. The stairs also are new. For some reason, I don't think they've lasted because most people have replaced them. So next. Here's a view looking the other way. Also, this house has a ceiling running all the way across. They covered the living room and put a ceiling in to reduce that size. And that's one of the issues with today's house. Outside, they have lanai's areas. You have your kitchen off to the left. You see this going out next. Here's another example of backyards. The owners can pretty much do as they pleased. And so there's great variety in how the backyards. And these, compared to a typical townhouse, are much more generous. Next. Although on the other side, the Kapiolani Park side, they are very narrow. Some of the units, the lanai is covered rather than open. This house had it covered, and she also put louvers to go across them that they're not functional. I tried to close it and I couldn't, but that is there. Next. And some have done like this. They've used retractable screens to enclose the lanai area. Next. And then some have totally enclosed it. There's, I think, two, maybe three that are that way now. Next. And here you can see from the interior what happens once you enclose that lanai. They took out the wall between the dining room, what was the lanai. So there's a bigger flow. Next. And here you can see from the inside what that looks like. Next. And where did I stick this one in? Oh, this is another one where they went out, where they pushed the living room out to the end of the lanai. Next. And here you can see that one. They did keep some of the lava rock in this case. And here's one unit, number two, where he's actually added a new lanai on the back of the building. Here's a rare example. I'm quite sure this is the original surface of the lanai, at least one of the choices that were offered, because I've seen this in some hotels and condominiums, the same tile. But otherwise, I think all the lanais have new paving. And here's an original doorknob, just so you know what it looks like in the future. Nobody has all their doors with this doorknob, but every so often I see it in a house, so it's original, but I don't think any house consistently has them all. Many have none. This is the house today. This is the Gringer residence. Again, one part of the duplex. You have the balcony running across. Next. Here's a look you can see with this neighboring duplex, what it is. This house is on a corner, so it sort of has an exposure on the other side too. Next. You can see it comes around and their backyard is secured by a fence. Has the original door. Original paving down below is not there, but that's true of, I'd say, at least 60%. Of them.
Forget about it.
Inside, you come in, the hallway is there, your powder room's to the left, your bedroom's to the right. Here's the powder room. It's been altered. Again, this powder room has, I think, Wiedemann, maybe. I don't think Fung even had original. I think there's only one original powder room we found out at the 19 on the register. So the spin change is not uncommon. Next, the bedroom. It's new finishes. And the bathroom has also been totally remodeled, which is also, I don't think we have any original bathrooms completely. Some have the cabinet with the sink. Originally, these bathrooms had a partition wall, which partitioned the toilet and shower off from the sinks. Very few have that anymore. So it's something that's been changed and changed quite a bit on almost all the houses. But as you can see, you still have that spatial sense going back to the dining and kitchen area. Here's the dining room kitchen area. This one also, the kitchen's been remodeled, which is almost always the case, and the partition wall has been removed, which is almost always the case. The open beam, the original dining room did have open beams. This one is slightly different, but they put something back to sort of indicate that as well. Next. Here you can see the stair has been replaced, but it's in the right place where they've always been. Here's the beams for the dining room. Here you can see the living room as it is now. It does have a ceiling going all the way across it. There is no break to show a two-story space. And that's a major. The other change that has happened in the house, they have replaced their bronze anodized aluminum sliding doors with wood doors. And here you can see from the outside, this is one of the lanais that are covered, but it's still open. It still has all this lava rock outside. Next. And here's a view looking out at the yard. Next. And here you can see the elevation, the balcony where the bedroom is still there. Sliding doors from the living room. Next. We're done. Here's the straight run that goes up to the second floor. Next. And they now have a large family room up here on the second floor. These changes were all made prior to the present owner. They bought the house this way. And then from the stair, you go to the right, and there'll be an L-shaped hallway. At the door to the bedroom's in the right location, but go next. They've changed that into a walk-in closet. One other house has done that all, not this way, but they have, instead of a bedroom, they made it into a walk-in closet. Next, this so essentially, go back for a second, Mary. This walk-in closet takes up half of what would have been bedroom, bathroom. The other half is bathroom. Next. The bathroom you enter through this door. Go. And here you can see the bathroom, which is all totally modern. And has a really nice marble, which I like a lot. And I just stuck it in. It's from India. And, called Bidasan Rainforest Green Marble. But it's quite distinctive. Next. Then here's the bedroom, which has the doors opening up out onto the balcony. But again, new wood doors. The wood shutters are very common. A lot of the homes, rather than use drapes, are using wood shutters internally. Okay. And that's the house. And I'd like the board to reconsider the nomination. I think the townhouse complex as a whole is the major thing. I think alterations that have been made, although I think they're recognizably not historic, but you can still get the indoor-outdoor relationship, and this the whole sense of indoor-outdoor living comes out, and just the size of the units are impressive. So that's what I have to say.
Questions? We've discussed this before.
Questions first, then we need a motion. Anybody?
Nick, any questions?
And let's have a motion for purposes of discussion, at least.
I'll make a motion that the Granger residents come in unit 3, accepted under the registered historic places, under criteria A and C. under the term cluster? No, multi-property denomination.
Second, Nick?
Second.
I'll do second. Okay, so I have a second.
Adrian? Any questions,
thoughts?
You turn off your mic.
Adrian, we've gone over this almost every time, so
I'm 20-something
on the right now.
No, it'd be good to get a fresh perspective, I think. I think it's every meeting there's been this three nominations or processes.
So what has been the sticking point on it previously?
Yeah, I think each time it's been a bit of a trying to grapple a little bit with what is the historic integrity. I think last time, after discussing it, identifying this is a ongoing building, right? What are the funding factors of this building, its layout, its form, the relationships, all that kind of stuff. I can't remember exactly what was the.
It's going to be neat for us.
Yeah.
The whole thing. And there are other multiple property nominations, but they were done back in the day when it wasn't really clear that you set out the expectations for integrity and things like that, which was how it was all designed originally. But like the Tudor houses, one we did.
Right.
Have that level of specificity as we do with this. And so I think it's set out quite well in the multiple property umbrella that these changes are an expectation. Mm-hmm. I think maybe the insertion of the floor itself was an issue a couple early on.
Mm-hmm.
But that, excuse me, we kind of reversed that. Because the mezzanines really had already covered half of
it. They were an option, right?
Yeah. And just to be aware, too, the board vote was 3 in favor and 2 opposed. So, but.
It's a split.
Yeah. And you needed the 4 yes votes, and so always. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened.
On this one.
And that's why I was encouraged to come back. Yeah, all the rest have been unanimous. You may have, yes.
Yeah. I think just another point about kind of the history of who's on here being nominated was, I think one of the first times I was serving on board, we would get to go see these, the ones that were being nominated that night. And a couple of them were in great original, almost
right.
Really original commission, which kind of spoiled the rest of it. So, you know, because I was like, oh, they're all set the expectations so high. I was like, yeah, of course. And they're all, straight from the 1970s. And then anything that deviated from that, I think, became very apparent.
The way the multi-property nomination is written, there's allowances for the interior, though.
Yes.
And then, but the exteriors all seem like they're pretty consistent.
Right. That's
so
like the minimal expectation is the exterior.
Well, it seems like the interior changes here may not really matter, given that there are others with interior changes that have been listed already.
We've got Facebook with nothing on the interior. They've all retained a certain recognizability, let's say.
Yeah.
And I think we've kind of accepted too that maybe in some future, more enlightened time, God knows when that'll be, this would be a district too.
Yeah, we get enough.
It's just a peculiarity of Hawaii.
And actually, right now, I have one of the board members who was opposed to the idea is now interested, but they also have the ceiling all across their living room.
we have others with ceiling.
Yes, exactly. There's two others with that already. And so
I think too we've been kind of impressed by the town brings these things up, like getting the door to match and everything.
that really the ultimate purpose of what we do, which is preservation, seems to be doing what it's supposed to do, encouraging preservation.
And like with the house we nominated last May, the people actually, the previous owners had relocated the stair upstairs. They had blocked off the mezzanine door was blocked, and they had made that into a bathroom. They had the back windows to the opening out onto the lanai. That had all been closed and made into a window. They had taken all that back. They actually the lava rock. They thought, oh, this will be easy. We'll just take the boards off and expose the lava rock. They took the boards off and found out the lava rock was gone. And so they rebuilt that as well. And so I think the people are becoming much more conscious and wanting to.
They're working from, you'd be working from, which is how is the character defined? And
yes.
And so if this is compliant with that, I don't see why we wouldn't.
That's my
feeling. Come around to that conclusion as well.
That's my
two cents. Okay. Nick, any thoughts? I don't think I have any thoughts. I think you and I were the two no votes, right?
Right.
I think for me, when we went to see these, that was the first time I saw any of these. The presentation that Don gave before this was actually helpful. I never did receive that that overview, so that was helpful. Like you, I was struck by the ones we went into before were in very good condition. They have a lot of the same character defining features, and that's kind of the juxtaposition. It's what I was left with when I voted. I think it was helpful for Don to share the sort of the gamut of alterations. I think the full ceiling, the kind of covering that up, I think that definitely changes a lot. But I guess I'm more convinced this time that it kind of fits in with the diversity of alterations. It just for me, trying to figure out where that, not being an architectural historian, figuring out where that kind of through that gray area where alterations are allowable and was too far, I think, is really the question.
Okay, anybody else? Not very many of us here. So why don't we call the question? We have a motion and a second already. So all of those in favor of listing this property under the umbrella, multiple property nomination, as under criteria
A and C.
A and C.
I just made sure we are giving up on A altogether.
At what significance level? National,
local,
state, or local?
Local.
The local level is significant. Raise your hand.
Thank you for reconsidering.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Okay.
You have another couple owners?
One more. So, Henry Alexander, Una Walker, Beach House.
Can I just mention, I have a hard stop at 4 child I need to recover.
Good. I can move fast if you don't mind.
I don't have an absolute hard stop, but I'd like to be out by 2:30 if possible.
Oh, okay. I'll move very fast.
I got a 2:30. I've got to meet from the tree.
I just got to notify one owner. Okay. If we're going to move fast. I'm going to tell him beyond in and out. Huh? Yeah, Kaiser. No, Walker we're going to do next. Wait, just let me send a text.
The cookies was probably not the best idea. I had a cookie for lunch, too. kind of been a major sugar hit there.
So next time, since Trish isn't here, we'll have to bring more cookies, or instead of cookies, maybe health food items
healthy
for you.
We won't be able to have let's see, Fruit Loops anymore because, you know, the new, like the carry health doesn't like.